This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Wednesday, hump day, middle of the weekday, halfway there, halfway to go, however you want to look at it. Thank you for joining us today on TSN 1290. Lots to get to today. The Calgary Flames no longer searching or trying to build a new arena in Calgary. Seattle is set to build a new arena. We'll discuss that. Mark Scheifele on expectations for this upcoming Winnipeg Jets season. Sun columnist, Sun Media, Steve Simmons. Leafs win the Cup 2 to 3 years. We'll discuss that. Cleveland Indians are on a heater, 20 in a row. Who plays Terry Francona? Billy Bob Thornton? Think about it. NFL, CFL, Tyler DeLoe on some Jets expectations and stats. Dennis Bayak, Jared Clinton, Gus Katsaros talking hockey. We're going to qualify two more people for hockey nights in Vegas. And your NHL news and notes, we're going to tee up the phone lines as well for you. An hour of your phone calls on everything we're going to talk about today. And anything else. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad, man. Kind of geeked up about some of the yapping going on out east, right? A number of different sort of fronts here. Captain C, the plan, the parade quote on the little part of the paper and stuff. So it's fun stuff. It's a great time of year.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Just all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm kind of waiting until Friday.
You jacked up.
And NHL 18 comes out.
Oh.
It's usually games usually come out Tuesday, so I was a little taken aback yesterday. But I'm basically just gonna somewhat mentally check out until Friday afternoon.
Okay, fair. Appreciate it. You know,
this is a safe circle, right?
Yeah,
very safe circle of trust.
Private little conversation.
Yep. I have in the past worked with certain camera men and women and editors that have taken the day off when a certain video game has come out. To play it all day and all night.
Jeez, really?
Yeah. Like 30-year-olds.
Yeah, that's the great. It's not 9 years old at home, right?
No,
it's 30-year-old dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm 27, so it's okay. Yeah. Thanks.
That's funny. Gentlemen, Calgary Flames president and CEO Ken King said Tuesday at the Flames golf tournament that the team is no longer pursuing a new arena. Quote, I think they came to the right conclusion. We've been working for a long time trying to come up with a formula that really works to replace this building, and we're really put our best foot forward. And I've come to the conclusion, sadly, and I'm very disappointed that I don't think we can make a deal that works for us, King told TSN. I think the city's come to the same conclusion, and I don't think they can make a deal that works for them. Without a new building, there will be consequences, Commissioner Gary Bettman told Metro Calgary. Negotiations are over. They'll play out the string here as long as they can. Flames and Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi has been discussing the possibility of a new arena for several months as part of a further development downtown. Calgary Nenshi is expected to comment on the situation sometime today. They were meeting last night, the city hall and councillors and the mayor, and they have an election coming up in October, and I think it was around the $400 million mark for taxpayer dollars to build this new facility that the Flames and everybody else in Calgary would use. What are your thoughts on this, the move, and of course the potential move, with Seattle announcing hours earlier in the day that they are building a new $600 million arena?
Yeah, if it is coincidence, it's one of the most remarkable situations regarding coincidence ever. This is high stakes poker, I guess, right? The Flames saying negotiations are done, talks are done, and now it's, I guess, if the city, now you'll see just how serious and where the city stands and what complicates things, like what you just said there, JT, for an election to be upcoming, then it really makes something that would be a hot topic that much more hot and hotly contested. So it's unfortunate and sad for all the hockey fans that are here. We understand this situation for sure. And, boy, wouldn't it be something to see Calgary lose its hockey team. That would be real sad and stuff. But We live in a day and age here, and it seems to get more contentious as time goes forward, where public funds being used for such things are that much more hotly debated and discussed, where maybe in decades past it was viewed as a little bit more acceptable, or at least the costs involved weren't as remarkable. I'm not sure which of those two exactly, but it just, we live in interesting times here where teams are moving, or cities, teams are being lost because of the home venue to house them. It's very interesting.
Yeah, well, or maybe it's that people are more aware and knowledgeable about the cost that goes towards the public, as opposed to, usually I think you might have just heard the lump sum before and, oh, well, the owners will take care of it. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's generally the public that takes care of it. And for people that have, you know, middle-class salaries, working-class salaries, it's something that can cripple a lot of people. And you know what? I haven't minded Gary Bettman for a while. And hearing him get booed the past couple of years, I've kind of thought, you know what? Like, he's kind of turned a corner. He's not that bad of a dude. Now I understand the hate.
The way he tilts his head and sort of his tone and everything else, I'm right there with you, man. The moment he started talking about this, it was just like there was a repulsion. Oh. Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's always in situations like this. And this idiot will sit in front of the microphones and the cameras in Glendale and in Raleigh and say, we are going to make this work. This team will not move. We're going to do whatever it takes to keep these teams in the Southern United States. And you have an actual hockey market in a city of over a million people. And he has the audacity to go up there and just spew horse crap out of his mouth saying, well, there's going to be consequences if the city of Calgary essentially doesn't pony up $1 billion from the public. What an absolute load of number two from this effing guy, right? Like that was all I could think of when I heard him talk. I was just blown away that he would actually have the balls to go up in front of the microphone after years of trying to keep the Coyotes in business, a sinking ship. You watch some of the Panthers games. Well, the Panthers aren't going anywhere. But the second the Flames can't, you know, jack up the prices towards the public when the owner is the 14th richest person in Canada. Oh, I can, all the boos and all the nasty words, it all just made total sense to me all over again. Listening to him try and essentially hold hostage the people of Calgary to keep their hockey team there.
Well, here's the thing. So, A, do you think they'd move?
Of course they'd move.
And B, like, you do think they would pull out and go somewhere?
Oh, I think no doubt about it in my mind. How many times you just, if they don't have the proper or access to a proper arena to help them keep pace in the NHL market, then yeah, they'll move.
So here's the thing then to me. Don't these always get built? And isn't it always a fight? And it always should be because it is taxpayers' money. But look at this city. Look at any city that's built a new arena.
What do you just mean don't they always get built, though, man? We've seen examples just recently.
Where?
Oakland. Where's Oakland going? Where were the Raiders going?
And the Chargers.
How about the Chargers? Yeah, like, this is the day and age of this sort of thing happening.
But
you know?
Look at Seattle. Look at Quebec. They're building arenas without even teams. Kansas City just built an arena within a decade ago that doesn't even have a team. Like, look at this city. Look at this city.
Will teams leave if they can't get a building built? And we've seen that it happened.
In the National Hockey League, though?
Well, I suppose because of what Wicks, and listening to Bettman, like the NHL goes way out of its way. And plus this is a bit of an ongoing story with the Coyotes, isn't it?
Well, that's Wick's point. It's been ongoing for 20 years, and they haven't pulled out. Mm-hmm. There's a facility waiting in a Quebec city in a market that we just saw the prototype right here in Winnipeg that they're not going there yet. Like, it, to me, don't get me wrong. I'm a taxpayer. I get it. But I also get what this facility has done, what the one in Quebec's going to do, what we heard this about the convention center here in Winnipeg, and yeah, I'm comparing it to Calgary, which I shouldn't because Calgary has way more money. Now, they're on a downturn. I understand that. I've been there recently, things are not well in the city of Calgary. But to me, the mayor, and I like this mayor, is trying to get reelected. And once he's reelected, these guys are going to reconvene, and then they're going to get a stadium or an arena. I understand the fever around this and what it means to each community, but I heard this about the Gold Eyes facility before I moved to this city, and is there one person that thinks that was a mistake? I heard that about the MTS Center when it opened 3 months before I moved to this city, and is there one person that think the only thing the mistake of the MTS Center is they didn't do more around it at the time, like some rapid transit and progress forward, in my opinion. Now, with Calgary, it's a different story because that city is literally struggling with this turn in the oil industry, and it doesn't look like it's going to come back. But the benefits it brings, and I think this always comes down to how much is the owner going to kick in and how much is the taxpayer. But to me, this seems like a guy or a city council who's like, we all want to get reelected. The minute we say we're putting this much tax dollars to a building, we're not. So we're going to ride this election out. Then we're going to reconvene with this owners. Like, I just don't know if they'll leave. And I think Ken King and the Gary Bettman and everybody else are sort of sitting there going right now, you should be doing this. We should be moving forward with this. I mean, maybe they would. I don't know.
Well,
Seattle, Quebec.
Built. That's the point, right? Like, there's no way they're going to stay if they're – and that's an old barn in now, right? At some point in time, if it doesn't get – if something doesn't get built, they'll leave inevitably, right?
And that's a
what
barn that was outdated
that
within 10 years of it being built. Like, that's a barn that – I know it's not that old in people's mind, but that barn was outdated within a decade of being built.
I think your question should be not will they leave. The question is will it get built? Because if it gets built, they obviously don't leave. If it doesn't get built, they have to leave.
Well, I don't know if they have to. Like,
they can't be competitive from a revenue standpoint with that arena.
I don't know why they can't. It's sold out. Do some
suites,
renos.
Suites and all the rest of it?
MTS has already upgraded for the second time. They've got all these fancy new things they're going to bring out this year, and they put more seats in as it, like, they want a new building, clearly, but I don't know if they're actually going to, that's my question. I don't know if they're going to move or are they just going to dump, instead of building a billion-dollar arena, are you going to put $250 million into the one you have, like the MTS Center is? That's my question. Like, I guess as a journalist and a fan of the game, I'm just tired of hearing this with some team organization all the time. When
it will be around forever, though, right?
I guess,
if you're
yeah.
tired of hearing about it. It's not going to go anywhere. But what's interesting for me is before hearing this, yesterday afternoon, driving home after the gym, coming down Academy, and it just dawned on me and hit me. It's amazing. Like, how much better is our city since the return of the Jets? What percentage do I feel more happy and proud to be a Winnipegger because of the Jets being back in the NHL and us having them? Like, there is to try and measure that is a real difficult thing to do, isn't it? But it is on a lot on thousands of people's lives, not just those that go to the MTS Center. There is a remarkable impact, and how do you measure that from a dollar standpoint?
Well, that's the toughest part in all this, right? Because look, there is no way that billionaires should be getting massive financial breaks when it comes to building these stadiums at the cost of the taxpayer. Like, it's so ridiculous that we're at that point, especially when you see in Vegas, you know, the owner of the Knights and the owner of the soon-to-be Raiders. Not a cent going to Vegas. Not a cent towards the public there for that new hockey arena. He paid for everything. Bill Foley paid for everything up front. And that's why I think they might have some success there in terms of kind of building some goodwill with the public. But that's the tough part, right? Is on the surface, it doesn't make financial sense for the average person to pay that much money. But especially in this market, we know what it's like to lose it and what those years afterwards were like. A lot of people it doesn't affect and they don't really care, and that's fine. But there's a lot of people that it hurt. It hurt for a real, real long time, and it's real hard to explain to, I guess, the average person what that feeling is like, right? Like what that does to you and what it does to a city when you lose something that's really integral to kind of the heartbeat.
Well, and Detroit literally declared bankruptcy, and Little Caesars Arena is going to open this year. And I understand who Little Caesar is, and the owner has passed on, but the family built this, and they have money, and I don't know how much taxpayers' money went into all that, but that's my point with this. We saw Brian Burke get into it with that guy at the breakfast, and now Ken King's pulling out, now Bettman's saying this. I'm so interested to see how this plays out, because I think after an October election, they sit down again with whoever's sitting there, and I bet you within a year to 2 years, they've decided to go ahead with something. They just don't. I'm not that worried about them leaving, even though yesterday Seattle said we're building a 600. I think that's your 32nd team in the National Hockey League is Seattle. I don't think there's a team moving there. And I don't know what happens in Quebec City. I think Quebec City is still waiting for something to go belly up in Florida or Arizona and get a team.
And certainly if there is a team that's going to be moving, if it is an expansion but relocation, there's at least a handful of teams you'd put in front of Calgary to relocate, yeah. Huh?
And no, like you said, no coincidence too. But in terms of kind of anteing up the pressure and the fear, mm-hmm. maybe more so. Seattle's a Pacific team. Calgary's in the Pacific Division. Nothing would, you know what I mean? That part really makes me sick too. But if you're kind of in the mind frame of we got to keep our team here, and you look at what Seattle's doing there, that is worst case scenario right off the bat.
Lots more to get to. We'll get your opinions on the news out of Calgary last night concerning the arena. Up next, Mark Scheifele has high expectations. We'll hear about that on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, Jim Toth, Brandon Ruicki, Troy Westwood on TSN 1290. Going to hear from Steve Simmons on the Leafs winning the Cup in the next 2 to 3 years. And we're going to delve into who wins the Cup sooner. Oilers, Flames, Leafs, Jets. It's going to be fun. 6:30, we're doing that. But right now on The Big Show, Mark Scheifele in New York. And this was interesting, gentlemen, because last year was Blake Wheeler. He's the captain. But captains and players always go to New York for publicity week and pre-tape a whole bunch of stuff and set up the season with the media and a little bit of a press junket. And this year was Mark Scheifele. He's making news because these are his expectations for the Jets this upcoming season and his own expectations.
I think it's got to be, first make the playoffs. Obviously we have a young team, but, I think we made some good pickups in the summer. How much better did Patty get? How much better did Nikki get? Troobs, Laos, me, every young guy on our team, has to get better for us to improve, and that's going to be the defining test.
This has got to be the year. We got to do it. Is there that feeling?
I think so. I think that's got to be your feeling every year. You can't be like, oh, this is a rebuilding year. We're just going to take it easy. Every year you have to go for it. And I know. With Blake running the ship, he's a pretty special guy. He's a competitive guy, and he's a guy that I definitely want to follow him to bigger and better things.
When you have 82 points and I think seventh in the league,
yeah.
At the end of the year, did you peek at the list and go, "That's pretty good"?
I looked at it and said it could have been better.
Really?
There's no doubt in my mind that in this sport you can't say that was great. I just hope to stay amongst them. I'm pushing to be better than Connor, be better than Sid, and obviously they're pretty lofty goals. Those guys are special players. They work unbelievably hard at their game. But at one time last year I was top in the league in scoring. So in my mind I see it as if I stay more consistent, there's no reason why I can't stay there. So. I just got to continue to push. I got some great line mates, which helps me. We got a great D core behind us, and I'm going to continue to push to be the best, and not just be mentioned in that company, but be at the very top.
Jets putting too much pressure on themselves, or is this exactly what they should be doing?
Yeah, I don't believe there's such a thing as putting too much pressure on yourself as a when you're a high-level athlete, oh, these guys have huge – they always – that's why they're in the positions that they're in. It is really neat to – you wonder from a point standpoint, like, sure, from an overall 200-foot game, maybe there's another step to be taken here, but is there another step here for Mark Scheifele from a point standpoint? Look, the last 3 years, 49, 61, 82. Can he actually go somewhere else and take it a little bit more than that? You just got to love the internal drive of this guy and the work ethic. He embodies everything you want with every single guy in that locker room, right? If everyone's got the mindset and the drive of Mark Scheifele, you're in real good hands. And it's just he's fantastic. And you just wonder, is there another step he's going to take here and somehow get himself further up and regarded even more highly than he is?
Yeah, I always try to be careful this time of the year because it's best shape of my life season, where everything's positive going into training camp and there's no concerns for any team and any players. But it really sounds like he's ready to drive this team. And he mentioned, you know, being the driving force and being the guy that with the two wingers beside him, that he's the one elevating their play. And he's just everything you hear about him. The amount of pure, essentially, inspiration he's kind of throwing out there for the team. And when it comes to a work ethic standpoint, you know, if you're out there watching what he does in practice and what he does off the rink and you're not matching that, well, that's on you, because Shifley's kind of setting the standard for the Jets, and that's a real, real comforting sign for the team.
So what do you – we'll do this on the Boss Pizza fan line too. What are your expectations for him? Does he get 90 points? Think about it.
If he gets a point a game, how anything close to a point a game would be wildly successful.
We'll hear about Leafs Nation. We know you love to hear about that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates may be applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN 1290. .ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show. 34 minutes past the hour. Supposed to be nice out today. It's supposed to rain on Friday. The Big Show will be out at Bell MTS Iceplex on Friday as the Jets kick off training camp there Friday. Fan Fest, everything going on there will be live from 6 till 11. Looking forward to that, of course. Gentlemen, as Mr. Westwood, this got you fired up, eh?
What did?
The article we're going to talk about, or the words from Steve Simmons?
Yeah, I find it was fun. Like, I'm right there in a lot of ways thinking, yeah, the Leafs, look out for the Leafs. But I just thought when the center of the universe grabs a blowhorn and starts talking, and especially on the cover of his paper, like on the booklet that it came out, like planned the parade. And they start, you know, going off on the Leafs capturing a Stanley Cup and how he's been covering this team or following it since before 67, yada, 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 best team he's ever seen on paper. And it was just, I just thought, holy cow, look out. Now buckle up, Toronto, because the rest of the hockey world's coming at you.
Does this fire you up when you read and hear stuff like this?
I kind of like playing the troll here a little bit. Like I kind of like poking the beast here in Winnipeg. Anytime you mention the Leafs, it's immediate, essentially vomit. And the fact that they are, this is different than when they made the playoffs and went up against the Bruins a few years ago. Like, this is a team that's actually built properly and built for long term success. So that's kind of why I enjoy this conversation.
Steve Simmons, of course, a longtime and veteran sports columnist for the Toronto Sun and a regular on TSN The Reporters and TSN 1050. He was on the radio talking about his column as well, saying this about the Leafs. He was on with Michael Landsberg and Winnipeg's very own Derek Taylor. Here's Steve Simmons.
2 to 3 years, I think, would be the the framework I'm talking about, and I'm basing it on history and on the current roster. If you look at what Sidney Crosby did when he first came to Pittsburgh, I think he was 22 when they won their first cup. He was Jonathan Toews was 22. Patrick Kane was 21. Evgeny Malkin was 21. The Maple Leafs, you look at this roster, and I'm going to backtrack for a minute. I've been covering this team for 30-some years, and I've been watching them pre-expansion. So we're going back a long way. I remember staying up for George Armstrong scoring in the empty net in 1967 for the last Stanley Cup. At no time post-expansion have I looked at a Leaf roster and said, this is a team that can win the Cup. They've had some good teams. Pat Burns had good teams. Pat Quinn had good teams. Roger Nielsen had some good teams. But I've never looked at a roster and said, they have this. And I look at this roster now, and I think they can be there, especially with the young talent up front that they have that I think is exceptional.
So Steve Simmons on TSN 1050 in Toronto basically saying the Toronto Maple Leafs will win the Stanley Cup in the next 2 to 3 years.
And you look at the way, look at the age of powerhouses in the East. With Montreal, you got Weber and Price in the 30s, right? Or you got Price knocking on the 30s. You got Ovi and Crosby, or sorry, Malkin and Crosby, 31 and 30. Ovechkin, 31. So when you start talking 2-3 years down the road, when a good chunk of the powerhouse strength that sits in the East is going to be on the back, or well onto the back nine, maybe walking up 17, 18 sort of thing, it's not hard for me to envision the Toronto Maple Leafs in being a powerhouse. I do think that there are obviously some additions, or they need to strengthen still defensively, whether they've got guys in the pipeline for that or not, I'm not sure. But this year, that's likely what's still to hold them back. But it's not hard for me to imagine, boys, and we've been talking about this. I've been talking about this since the emergence of Edmonton, remembering Jets 1.0. Edmonton is in a certain place in the West right now. You know, the second favorite to hoist the Stanley Cup as we speak. And then you got an emerging Toronto team. And you know, I think it was 2019-20 that I picked the Cup, the Jets and the Leafs to be in the Cup against one another. You can the Oilers, though, are a step ahead of the Jets. No matter how you cut it, there's three strong, and plus Calgary, strong Canadian teams are going at it. And Toronto is poised to make some serious noise in the East. It's just a matter of when. I agree with Steve Simmons in that matter.
Yeah. I don't think it's a matter of when they make noise. It could. I mean, they almost made noise last year. Mm-hmm. Like, they gave the Capitals, I mean, they were in overtime in Game 6. Like, they were this close to maybe pulling off one of the bigger upsets we've seen.
Yeah, and
in
people
playoff
were
history.
Laughing at the matchup.
I laughed at
it began.
Them. Yeah. I think me and Jim both kind of laughed at them. You gave the Leafs some credit. I thought it would be 4.
I thought they'd get swept.
I thought it would be real ugly, but the Leafs kind of held themselves in there. And yeah, realistically, you look at their roster, and I guess elite defense is the one thing they're missing. And maybe Morgan Rielly takes that step and becomes that guy for them. But they're not, I mean, they're pretty loaded at every single position here. And they've got some scary trade chips that they can use as well if they decide that, hey, it's time to kind of cash in and go all in and maybe fix that one issue that's been plaguing us for a long time. Plus, they're going to sign John Tavares next year in free agents. Like, everything's working out for the league. Yeah, but for me, you would have to explain to me why they wouldn't be a cup contender within 2 to 3 years, more so than why would they be one?
To me, it would be defensively. If they're good, right now, when you got Gardner, Zaitsev is your top, and then Hainsey with Rielly, like they need. Is Rielly going to be the number one guy upcoming? I don't know, but if you look at a weakness right now, for sure, that's the glaring part of the team that you go, okay, they're going to hoist a cup with that D, huh?
Well, what if Anderson goes down?
Well, you can say that about a lot of teams. What if the starting goaltender goes down? You can say that about almost everybody, right?
Well, I mean, look at Pittsburgh. Like,
but now
Murray goes down and Fleury wins them two rounds.
Although, but if Murray goes down now, what does Pittsburgh have? I think you have to kind of take the injury thing out of it.
Yeah.
I would even maybe buy the argument that you don't think Anderson is a good enough goalie. Like that one I could kind of
that's where else I was going to go. I was literally going to go there to the point where are we totally 100% sold on Frederik Anderson winning a Stanley Cup?
I don't even think he's that good of a goalie, but was Marc-Andre Fleury that good of a goalie for Pittsburgh when they won? What about Antti Niemi for Chicago? You don't need a really good goalie. Like you really don't. You just need them to be. I guess it depends on the makeup of your team, though, right?
Need them to be hot.
Yeah, like Chicago and Pittsburgh, they don't need great goaltending. If they get it, they become unstoppable. But if they don't, they can kind of outscore their problems. I think the Leafs are in a similar boat they don't need him.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about Steve Simmons saying the Leafs will win the Cup in the next 2 to 3 years. Here's the other thing about the Leafs and their defense. I think that's their biggest issue. However, last year, Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup, and the 8 defensemen that played for them in the playoffs that saw ice time, not one of them has ever received a Norris Trophy vote. Like, their defense last year was not upper echelon when you look at the injuries and the health and the guys who, of the 8 that actually skated for at least one game in the playoffs for them.
It's a very fair point to make, and when you project forward, it's not hard to imagine the Toronto Maple Leafs under the leadership of Mike Babcock playing a very similar game to what you see in Pittsburgh where everybody is all in every inch of the ice, right? It's not hard to imagine.
So here's where I'll go with this. The Oilers are the second favorite team, you said, to win the Stanley Cup this year.
True, yeah.
The Flames, people are asking if they are going to reach 100 points this year. Two of us on this show think the Jets are going to make the playoffs, and the Leafs now have Steve Simmons saying 2 to 3 years before they win a cup. I look at these rosters. They're all built the same. They all have the same question marks. I think other than the Jets and the Flames on defense, goaltending goes to the Jets and the Flames compared to Toronto and Edmonton. So who wins the Cup first, if any, in the next 2 to 3 years?
I got to go with Edmonton there. When you have McDavid up front, like so far and away the best player, and you damn near, like we're talking about Toronto almost getting there, Edmonton almost got there, like, right? And they got absolutely screwed in that playoff series by some of the reffing and the goal stuff, and arguably with Cam Talbot, I think he's still an underrated goalie in the league. Knocking on the door, spectacular possible, so I'm going to go with Edmonton, no doubt.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, you'd give the edge to Edmonton in goal for sure, but Edmonton's defense isn't that spectacular either.
And I wanted to bring that up in the playoffs. That was the biggest surprise to me about the Oilers. Their defense played above the level they played in the regular season. And I know the analytics don't like Chris Russell. I like Chris Russell. I think he's a decent NHL defenseman. I've never seen him play that good. Like, there were several guys on that blue line for the Oilers that played way above what their norm has been.
See, yeah, and the thing with it, I mean, you can make all the arguments in the world for the Leafs, but then all I can hear in the back of my head is McDavid. McDavid. Mm-hmm. Like, Austin Matthews, McDavid. Well, Nazem Kadri's a good third, McDavid. Like, that's kind of the thing that just may, it almost pushes them ahead. I'm going to go with the Leafs, though. I'm going to pick Toronto. I say Toronto has a better chance of getting there before Edmonton does. And I think it has to do with their division. If they can, because it's basically them and Tampa Bay. And after that, the teams are kind of meh.
Have fans gasp.
Oh, what are Habs fans going to do? How about you score more than 2 goals in a playoff series before you come at anybody saying that you need more respect when it comes to the postseason?
I don't like Montreal's lineup at all this year when I looked at it. But anyways, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Yeah, that was it. I don't like Montreal's lineup either, but I'll go with Toronto. I want to say Edmonton solely because of 97, but I don't think people realize how good Nazem Kadri was last year. Like, really, like, he was really, like, he scored 30 goals and got every single tough defensive matchup.
Yeah, he was damn good.
Well, depth-wise at the forward position, I don't like the Oilers.
Yeah, there's that too.
So when it comes to winning the Stanley Cup, I don't like. I lean towards. I think Winnipeg, Toronto are pretty fair depth wise and forward and talent. I think Calgary's next. And then even though they have the reigning most valuable player and Leon Draisaitl playing beside him, that was the problem with Draisaitl last year, was whenever they took him away from McDavid, he couldn't produce because their depth isn't very good up front. So I don't know who wins the Cup first out of those two teams, but coming out of the East, I think it would be a lot easier. And when you have to now factor in salary cap, I just don't know, because the Leafs are going to have the same issues the Flames or the Jets are in 2 years from now, 3 years from now, Jets facing it after this season. It's interesting. But I understand. It's interesting to me about the Simmons piece is what Derek Taylor, if we listen to the whole interview on 1050, brought up. 1993. He feels this team has a better chance now than 93 to win the Stanley Cup. And that 93
team. That was a beauty run.
Against the Kings. Yeah. I thought if they had gotten past the Kings, they were going to win the Stanley Cup. But Simmons.
So did the nation.
Yeah, and Simmons, who was there covering the team, feels that this team has a better chance of winning it than that 93 team.
Which is kind of, well, kooky talk, because 93 was in a position to do it. Like, they were there, right? You take where they got to, maybe before the season started of 93.
I think his point was, like, looking at the roster.
Yeah.
You know what I, like, that argument, I mean, it's hard to say when you're a game away from the Cup Finals.
They had a
you know
pretty
what
good
I mean?
Roster
look
in 93, though.
They had a good roster, but was it as promising as the one that they have today? I don't think it's an argument. I mean, Dougie Gilmore he was the killer, right? He was outstanding, but I don't know. I look at the roster they have now, and I think people kind of forget that Mitch Marner is a teenager, and Austin Matthews was a teenager, and Willie Nylander looks like a preteen, but he's only 20 years. Like, so many of their guys were so, like, you would have thought they were seasoned pros last year, and they put up 60-plus points each, but they were kids.
We're up against the clock here, but would you guys give Matthews a captaincy this year? They didn't have one last year. They rotated.
Yeah, I don't have the whole, you know, he's too young and let him season another year. Don't put extra pressure on him in a sophomore year. He's not a normal young player. I say, yeah, absolutely, I would feel comfortable in giving him the C.
Yeah, I mean, those kinds of players, the McDavids and the Crosbys, they're different human beings than everybody else. Like, the pressure is... Pressure is what they deal with every single second of the day. I don't think it would affect his play at all.
I don't know if I'd do it. I mean, he's going to be the captain. Yeah, I don't care. I wouldn't do it this year. I would give him one more year of, because the captaincy we have to remember is that whole, like, him telling guys that are literally 10 years older than him what to do, how to do it. I would let him play.
Dealing with the media to the degree that he
that
would have
too,
to.
That too. I would just pull him aside still and just let him play this year and then put an A on it maybe and then give it to him. We'll do this on the Boss Pizza fan line. Do you agree with Steve Simmons, and who wins a Cup first out of the four Canadian teams we were talking about? But up next, we get into some baseball, NFL, CFL on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter now to win at tsn1290.ca. Next Bomber home game after the bye is Friday, September 22nd, when they host the Red Blacks. Breaking news out of the CFL. This is from Tony Marinaro of TSN 690 in Montreal. The Montreal Alouettes, he says, a source tells him, have fired head coach Jacques Champdelaine and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe.
And 13 hours ago or so, Andrew Wettenhall, who's the owner's son, said that nobody's safe. Now, you got a guy like Noel Thorpe, who would be, I would say, top two head coaching hot prospects for the next opening head coaching job. This is really strange. You got Kavis Reid in there, a young GM, hasn't this first time around here as GM, And I can see something going down with Jacques Chapdelaine. I question that hire to begin with. But Noel Thorpe, are you kidding me? That's their defensive coordinator. The guy has been at the helm of one of the best or the best defense for the last close – it must be somewhere around a decade in Montreal. That makes no sense whatsoever. This reeks of remarkable personality conflict here, quite possibly.
Yeah, and my – I mean, I'm with you guys where the Thorpe point, I mean, we all watch the defense play every week. What's the problem? What could possibly be the problem with the defense to think that you need to fire the guy up at the top? It's clearly some kind of clash of egos or something real wrong within that organization. But I look at it from a Bombers perspective, and if he doesn't get a head coaching job next year, that means Noel Thorpe is going to be a DC somewhere. If he can bring that Montreal defense to the peg, you're telling me that's not a Grey Cup contender, right? Maybe right there with Calgary.
You wouldn't even want to wait to the offseason.
That's kind of where I was going with that.
Take it easy.
No.
Guy just got let go in Montreal. So breaking news, the Montreal Alouettes, according to TSN 690 in Montreal, Tony Marinaro, have fired head coach Jacques Chapdelaine and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe. Montreal's given up 304 points this year.
They're on the field nonstop.
Yeah, that's just the – and they're 3-8 so far this season. So we'll continue to follow that throughout the morning. Gentlemen, before we take our next break and get into the Rural Sports Power Hour, the Cleveland Indians have won 20 in a row. Mr. Kluber was on the mound yesterday in a 2-0 victory. They tie the record set by the Oakland A's, the Billy Bean movie, everything else. They play this afternoon to go for 21. Do they get it done?
I don't know if they get it done or not, but I've seen the team on the top of the list had a tie. That's ridiculous. And Elias is saying that, no, this counts. Ties don't count in win streaks. That's ridiculous. Everybody in sports knows that when you have a tie in a streak, it becomes an unbeaten streak. It's not a win streak. So let's just strike that name right from the top. I would expect Elias to make a change to that, actually, over the next couple of days. I think public pressure will be way too hot here. But certainly a team that's a whole pile of fun to watch. And we talked about just what they were doing and some of the differentials, right? Like they're that whole run differential, the lack of runs against them and everything, what they're doing, some people arguing historically, maybe this is already the greatest win streak.
Yeah, and the reason I guess they count that is because it was a tie. They were forced to replay the game or to kind of play it over, and the Giants won that game. So, I mean, kind of an asterisk still, right? I would probably look more towards the 21 as the record. But Cleveland's a scary team, and the one thing I kind of like about this streak is it gives everybody a chance to watch Francisco Lindor night in, night out. Yeah. And if you don't like watching this kid play, I don't like you. He is everything that baseball should be. How much fun he has out there, the celebrations, the talent. I just like the fact that maybe him becoming a household name is the best part of what could come from this streak.
It'll be interesting. Once again, they're on the field this afternoon. We'll know by tonight if the Cleveland Indians make it 21 wins in a row. We'll take a break. Tyler Dello from The Athletic is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we can be featuring them very soon on this Friday show, which we will be out at Bell MTS Iceplex Live from 6 a.m. till 11 as the Winnipeg Jets kick off their training camp. First on-ice session will be at 9 a.m. on Saturday. And, of course, FanFest gets underway out there as well. WinnipegJets.com has all the details for that. Always a big, fun event to kick off the season. Lots for all the U fans out there to take in. And Paul Maurice will join us live on the program, I believe, at 7 a.m. on Friday. So make sure you tune in for that as well. Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the voices here on TSN 1290, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in this segment, as well as your NHL news and notes. But breaking news just moments ago from Tony Mariano of TSN 690 in Montreal, the Alouettes have fired head coach Jacques Champdelaine and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe. Champdelaine was also the OC, so they have no OC, no DC, and no head coach as they prepare to host the Ottawa Redblacks on Sunday afternoon. This means the Owls will have their sixth coaching change in the past five seasons.
No HC, no OC, no DC, no problem, ooh, man.
Means it's time. It means it's time for AC.
Yes.
Bring in some DC. Maybe more people will attend the next game after this move. We'll keep an eye on this breaking news as well. Also, this is the Royal Sports Power Hour. We talk a lot of hockey, and we're going to do some now with Tyler Dello of The Athletic. How are you, sir?
Not too bad, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. Great stuff recently. Well, not recently, but you've been doing with your writing. And one of the main items we want to talk to you about is, of course, the piece you put out on the Winnipeg Jets and the penalties they take. Before we get into the details of it, Tyler, let us know, did anything surprise you, anything stand out when you delve into a piece like this?
Well, it was, you know, it was something that I knew was a problem with Winnipeg. Like, I vaguely been aware that they take a lot of penalties. When I did dig into it, yeah, there were a few things about it. And so just to explain to people what it is, you know, the NHL gathers so much data and they don't organize it very usefully. And one of the things they have is penalties, but they don't really break them down in a sensible fashion. So what the piece was a way to kind of look at the penalties the Jets take and try and see if there's any trend or any players you can identify who maybe have a problem. And, you know, like Dustin Byfuglien's name popped up, which wasn't a surprise. But some of the other names, yeah, I was a bit surprised.
I like the point that you make in this piece, and it's fantastic. For anyone that doesn't belong to Athletic, you're being left behind in the dust. You have to join. It's tremendous and covers sports right across all fronts here. But a fantastic piece, and I love the point that you make talking about in people talk about drawing penalties and how it's, you know, it's in the analytics circles that it's a skill, and I agree with that. But there is that price that it comes with where refs inevitably feel or it seemed to feel a need to even things up as a game marches forward. So it's great if you're drawing penalties, but typically that can get you out in some penalty kill situations as well.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's one of those things that kind of goes both ways. Like the New Jersey Devils used to win cups in the early part of the century. There were never any power plays in their games. And, you know, they didn't take any penalties. They didn't draw any. And the Jets are kind of the mirror image of that, I guess, yeah, except for the Stanley Cup part. But they, you know, they take so many penalties. And I think that they get off the hook a little bit because I think the refs probably give them more calls than they would otherwise get. But so it kind of, you know, it kind of alleviates or you know, reduces the extent of the problem. But the other thing for the Jets is that their special teams haven't been particularly good over the past few years. So when you talk about the kind of game the Jets should want to play, playing a game that has a lot of power plays and penalty kills isn't necessarily good when the odds are the other guy's better at it than you.
So, Tyler, we know Dustin Byfuglien is one of the main culprits when it comes to taking minor penalties. Who else is on the list for the Jets? And sort of break this down a bit for us and what you found, who could be better?
Sure. So Jacob Trouba is another one. Now, he's interesting. You know, on the bad side of the ledger with him, he takes too many slashing penalties. So relative to other defensemen in the league, you know, he really piles up the slashing penalties. And, you know, what's interesting about this is it is something that, you know, as a team or as a coaching staff, you know, once you know specifically where the guy has a problem, you can go to him and say, look, you know, this is an aspect of your game that's letting you down. You know, let's focus directly on this. So he's another one that sticks out. And it's funny, amongst the forwards, like Patrick Laine got nailed last year with a lot of what I call aggression penalties. So that's things like splashing. And, you know, you look at him, like Patrick Laine's job is to score goals. You're really not looking at him to be in a position to be whacking guys with a stick all that often. So he's a guy who really stuck out to me. Another one who stuck out is Toby Enstrom. And it's interesting, in his case, what he takes are obstruction penalties. And relative to other defensemen, he is amongst the worst in the NHL. So, you know, there's a case there where, you know, the Jets can, again, go through the video and start to look for trends in what he's doing and consider whether or not there's a way he can kind of manage his game to reduce that.
Tyler, Jets fans are all too aware that the Jets need to increase their level of discipline here for this upcoming season. It's been something that has been on the front burners of conversation. How much, in your opinion, what role does Paul Maurice play with this?
Well, I had a line in the thing, is that I'm not sure it's a Paul Maurice problem, but I do think it's Paul Maurice's problem. And so when I say it's not a Paul Maurice problem, if you look back over his team, he doesn't have a history of teams that are kind of wildly undisciplined. He is, you know, he coached in Carolina for years, and his teams were fine. They had a lot more power plays than they had to kill. And so, you know, I think it's an issue he has to address, but I don't think it's necessarily an issue where Paul Maurice is, telling these guys to go out and put a stick in somebody, let them know you're there, like in Slapshot or anything.
That being said, how do you fix this?
I think once you really identify the problem, once you know, like Patrick Laine, you're using your stick too much. Jacob Trouba, you're slashing people too much. Once you really break it down beyond, we have a team problem with taking too many penalties, then I think it's an issue for the specific coaches. So, Charlie Huddy working with the defenseman, or Paul Maurice or the other assistants working with the forwards. I think it's an issue for them then to go to these guys and say, look, we've identified this very specific facet of your game, and, you know, we think you can do better, and, you know, here's the trend, here's the situation where it keeps happening. How can we manage this to keep you out of it? And I do know that that's something you can do, and that's something that can work.
Tyler, on a larger scale, also now you recently, just a few hours ago, have a piece here, and the headline is How Calling More Penalties Eliminated Offense and How to Fix It. Please dive into that and share with us that piece.
Sure. So what that's about is, as you guys will be aware, the NHL did a big obstruction crackdown in 2005-06, and so they wanted to call all the hooking, holding, everything else. And the interesting thing about that is that all the other kinds of penalties that the league calls kind of dropped significantly that year. So what what I think was going on is it's no different than the cops having sort of a specific focus on something at a specific time of the year. You know, the analogy I drew was at Christmas. They're worried about check stops for impaired drivers. They're not worried about if someone's parking in a bike lane. And I think with the NHL at that time, they got hyper-focused on the obstruction. And I wonder if they didn't loosen the standard for everything else. And what you've seen now is, in the last year before the 04-05 lockout, there were about 350 power plays per team, and we're now down to 250. So for every team in the league, that's 15 or 20 goals that have disappeared. And, you know, the argument that I advance, or the point that I make, is, you know, if the league has loosened the standard in other places in terms of, you know, cross-checking or high-sticking or roughing, this would be an opportunity for them to go out and say, okay, maybe we want to tighten up this standard in other places, because the obstruction calls have kind of disappeared now. We're sort of back to where we were in 2003-04. The problem is they don't really call roughing or a lot of the aggression penalties anymore, despite what you guys have experienced in Winnipeg over the last few years. So I think, you know, from a perspective of, you know, the league trying to find more offense in the game, there's probably a good argument that they could do with a tighter standard of enforcement.
Tyler Dello of The Athletic joining us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 15 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. That's one of my biggest frustrations with the league, Tyler, is a penalty in November is not a penalty in March or April. A penalty in the first period is not a penalty in the third. The inconsistency of how the league doles out. And I totally agree with you. I think when the league wants to clamp down on something, they do. And when they don't, they don't. And it's frustrating, I think, for fans.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's, you know, like, it's funny. There's some really good studies that have been done about officials over the years. And so much of what they're doing is managing the game. And there was a great story on 538 a few years ago talking about this. And, you know, Kerry Fraser, as much as said, you know, if you've got one team three or four times in a row, you're, you know, he wouldn't quite say you're looking for the other team, but reading between the lines, he was saying you're looking for the other team. And, you know, that has an impact because it, you know, like you know, hockey players are smart, hockey coaches are smart, and they'll go right up to the line. And so, you know, when you have this relaxed standard, I do think that, you know, it does kind of impact negatively on what you see on the ice and on offense. You know, like there's a saying around hockey that it's a 3-2 league, and I kind of think a 4-3 league would be more fun.
Tyler, we appreciate your time as always. Well, for the first time, we hope to have you back soon. This is great stuff and great insight. And once again, The Athletic is where you can read this fine work, and James Myrtle and everybody else's, Pierre LeBrun. Everybody's jumping on board with The Athletic. It's a great buy and should take it in. Is there room for you still there, Tyler?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
I think they'll find some space for me. But yeah, no, it's pretty exciting, the group of people that James has put together. And we're really excited for the season and excited to see what happens in Winnipeg.
I'm sure we'll talk to you real soon as well. Thanks for this and great stuff.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
Awesome stuff, Tyler. Thanks so much.
And you can follow him at Dello Hockey, D-E-L-L-O-W, Hockey on Twitter as well. We'll take a break and give you a chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas next on The Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through will be our latest qualifier as TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas. This November, we'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena on Friday, November the 10th. We're going to give you two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show with Kevin Olszewski at 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable, and of course at 5:15 p.m. on the afternoon ride with Huss and Mr. Rick Ralph. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Our first one, congratulations, Kevin Williams. He was our winner on Monday, September the 11th. Our next grand prize draw is Monday, September 25th. And three more to come on October 9th, October 23rd, and November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290. The $1,290 cash can do what you wish on this trip. You could sit on it, bring it home, which would be probably... Yo, sit on it.
The happy days, the fun stuff.
Yeah, and bring it home, which would be actually miraculous if you went to Vegas.
That's what Milt would go there at $12.90 in his pocket and come home with $14.10 somehow.
That's exactly what Milt would do, because yeah. He would have taken his own vegetables for his per
the
diem.
The old per diems and stuff, he'd always come home with that in his pocket, yeah.
I heard some great stories about when he and Doug Brown, Milt Stegall that is, by the way, on the CFLPA, and their meetings were in Vegas, and they would room together. And basically, other than the meetings, wouldn't see each other.
Yeah.
Milt's in the room, beauty sleep, eating veggies. Doug's enjoying Vegas. They'd run into each other at the meetings.
Yeah, you'd know where Milt was. Doug, you wouldn't know so much.
So $1,290 cash as part of this great trip for you to do what you wish with. There's several shows on the Strip going on at that time, including Santana, the Backstreet Boys, Carrot Top, Penn and Teller. Lots of stuff to get to. Who is our latest qualifier, Mr. Ruwicki?
It is Howie Prosiak.
Howie Prosiak. Congratulations, sir.
Prosie.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thank you for listening, and thank you for qualifying. Just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card, and your name goes into one of our next four grand prize draws. You ever been to Vegas?
You know what? I was there. I'm 48 now. I was there for the first time this past May, and I loved it.
Ah, what'd cool. you do down there?
My wife had a conference down there, so I went to supervise.
Ah, that is some good work, Howie. And that may be help you, too. You could sleep in, take in the town, say I'll meet you later after your conference.
I just don't know who I would take, my wife or my girlfriend, now. I'm kidding.
Howie, you might have just lost your wife and need a girlfriend right now.
Well, I guess my brother will be plan B.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's hoping we give you more airtime right now to make sure that works out for you. Howie, we appreciate it. What would you do with the $12.90 in cash? Would you go see a show? Would you lay it down on black or red? What's your plans?
Divorce lawyer.
Well, I would probably use some for gambling. I definitely want to hit Backstreet, baby.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Good for you. Well, Howie, we wish you the best of luck on your next anniversary, and we thank you for listening to TSN 1290. Our next grand prize draw is September 25th, October 9th, 23rd, and November the 6th. You'll be in for all four should you not win one of the previous three. And congratulations on the Jets Gear gift card, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290.
Thanks, you guys. Have a great day.
Good you luck, as man. Well.
That was fun. I wonder if the wife was listening. Or any of her friends.
I'm going to have to make that a button on the show. I have no context with it whatsoever.
Rosie could be in for a long day now.
Speaking of Howie may needing to develop a young squad, Kevin Cheveldayoff has been developing a young squad and talked with TSN's Bob McKenzie. We're running clips throughout the show today. I don't know where to go with that. Here's Kevin Cheveldayoff with Bob McKenzie of TSN talking about developing a young squad.
Well, certainly, you know, you have to, I guess, look at how you introduce a young player into the league. And not long ago, actually, the National Hockey League wasn't a development league for young players. You went to the minors. You played in the American League for a few years before you even saw the light of day in the National League. Those have shifted. That time has shifted. But when you have a young player, you know, certainly a skilled young player, you want to make sure that you bring them along and you don't suffocate their skill. And that's what I think Paul Maurice has done very, very well with all the young players that we've integrated into our lineup. He's nurtured them to the point where they're not, you know, just dump it in and chase the type of players. They've been given the opportunity to create, but sometimes that's come at the price of maybe not sitting them out, sitting them down, losing a shift or two when the defensive side of the game, you know, maybe comes into play. Patrick Laine is a fantastic, you know, skilled player. But if you ask him what the single biggest thing he probably learned during the year last year, it was about how to play defense, how to play without the puck, you know. So, you're playing offense only a short period of time in this game. And if you have the ability to create during that short period of time, you're very, very fortunate as a team. And we've got several guys like that. But when you don't have the puck or when the puck's in doubt, you have to learn how to get it back and keep it out.
Kevin Cheveldayoff in conversation with Bob McKenzie on developing a young squad, which is exactly where the NHL is at right now with its young players and its youth movement. We'll take a break when we come back. Dennis Bayak joins us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your stations, always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you this morning on The Big Show, the Royal Sports Power Hour. 33 minutes past the hour, your NHL news and notes still to come. And maybe some news and notes with our next guest. Welcome back to the program, the face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak. How are you, sir?
Gentlemen, I'm fine. How are you?
Doing very well.
Good.
How was your summer, and how was the Young Stars tournament to sort of wrap it up?
Well, summer was good. Lots of golf. We had some smoke issues in the interior of BC with all the fires, but there's been some of that here too. And as we drove back from British Columbia back to Winnipeg, it seems like all the western provinces are going through some of that. Lots of smoke in Alberta, some big fires there, smoke in Saskatchewan, and even smoke here in Manitoba. So it was that kind of a summer. Other than that, as far as the tournament was concerned, nice to see the Jets wrap it up with a victory. They had some good moments in the first two games, and you know, they had a very young roster there, lots of invites, and not a very experienced group, but they came together in the end and came up with a real good game to finish it up.
Just bouncing over to Calgary real quick, Dennis, your thoughts on the threat, I suppose, CEO Ken King saying the negotiations are off, and do you perceive any real threat possibly of the Flames leaving?
I can't see it. I mean, I don't like when you negotiate through the public. I understand there's frustration that's creeping in. I mean, it started with Brian Burke months ago, and then Ken King tried to defuse it at that point. You know, and now obviously there has been, or hasn't been, I guess maybe a better way to put it, any meetings over the summer or any progress over the summer. And now all of a sudden it's come to this. But, I mean, I can't see the Calgary Flames going anywhere or playing anywhere other than Calgary. I just think we've got some politics being played here by both sides. And I just, as I said, I don't like those type of negotiations going on in public. I just think it creates an atmosphere that you really don't want, especially at this time of the year with training camp getting going. And the Calgary Flames having a very good off season as far as some of the things that they have done personnel wise, and I'm sure there's lots of excitement in Calgary with regards to the upcoming campaign.
The Young Stars tournament was a different one this year. There were 15 players back here at the Bell MTS Iceplex on the ice with head coach Paul Maurice and some of the other staff. First time in a while where there wasn't too many guys other than maybe Tucker Poolman at the Young Stars that have a legitimate shot at making the roster, and I guess that's a good thing, Dennis.
Well, it is. That was the difference. There's no question. And that's why, you know, when the Jets lost those first two games, you looked more at what was going on inside the game than the actual result. You looked at some of the other teams that were there, and there was three, four players on those rosters, maybe more in some cases, of players that have a legitimate chance of seeing some NHL action with their respective teams this season. So that's why you watched kind of what was going on from the drop of the puck to the end of the game, who was advancing and who got better in game one to game two and game two to game three and that. But it was good to see Tucker Poolman get into a game. But it was a different roster. There's no question about that. They decided to keep anybody that, and there's a couple of reasons, I think. Anybody that had a close chance, that has a chance of making the Jets roster this year was kept back working on systems and making sure that their mindset was right. And secondly, I think there's been some concern with all the teams, and the Jets included, that some players go to that tournament and just kind of play to get themselves into a little bit of shape, make sure they don't get hurt, and don't compete at the highest level. And sometimes you don't want that rubbing off to some of the players that are there to compete at the best of their level. So I think there was a number of reasons for that decision, and I guess we'll see when main camp opens here later in the week at what level all those guys that stayed back are in preparation for main camp.
Dennis, over the last 4 years, the Jets have ranked 25th, 30th, 27th, and 28th in power play opportunities allowed. It's a huge issue or challenge for this team to greatly improve that. How can they go about making profound change to that?
Well, that's the challenge. There's no question because, you know, you can talk about if you improve your goaltending, will you get some saves on those penalty kills, which keeps your percentage, but that doesn't alter that number that you just talked about there, the number of times you're shorthanded in the course of a season, in the course of a game. And so now you start to break it down, and the coaches have. Certainly Paul Maurice has broken this down as to what kind of penalties are we taking. Are they stick penalties? Are they retaliation penalties? Are we chasing the game? and that's been the case in some cases. So now you have to start zeroing in on the ones that are easier to control, and that being the emotional penalties, the retaliation penalties. And what the harder job is going to be is the ones where your stick is getting up and you're getting the hooking and you're getting the tripping, and those are the ones. You can live with some of the high-sticking ones. You can live with some of the roughing ones. You can live with a hard check that maybe you can debate whether it was or wasn't. The ones that are that you have to eliminate, and those seem to be the ones that you have trouble killing, are the ones that you just get your stick up into somebody's hands and you get a hooking call, you get a slashing penalty. They really have to work on that, and that's something that has been talked about in the past. And now we just see to what level it starts off this season. It's something that the players have to take responsibility for. And if not, then as a coach have to start doing something of a drastic note where you start to sit guys out or whatever the case may be to try and get that message home. But that definitely is a stat that has to get better.
TSN3's Dennis Bayak joining us on the Big Show this morning, 39 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290. Dennis, Paul Maurice was on the afternoon ride here on TSN 1290 after signing his extension and made the comment of, I know that coaches always say training camp's wide open, but realistically, about five spots in the bottom six are up for grabs. How do you see that playing out, and who do you think has the best shot, and what are the names that are in there in the mix to try and make this team this year?
Well, and that's a pretty good number to have open, and I think that's the message that was sent to the guys that stayed back from Penticton, and we're working out every day, and that's the message you want your players to have during the off season when they get up in the morning and make their way to the gym to get their workout in. There's lots of names in that bottom six. We'll see. Is Sean Mathias's health, where does that all fall in? I mean, they added Matt Hendricks. How many games does he get in? And you can go on. Where does Mark O'Donnell fall in? Does Nick Batan find a spot in the top six, or does he fall into that bottom six, somewhere in there? So there's lots of candidates. Where does Jack Roslovic fit in? Certainly it will be interesting to see, with the addition of Matt Hendricks here late, do they plan on him trying to get into every game? Is he a guy that will maybe play 50 games this year? And then some games, depending on the team you're playing against, you'll throw a more of a skilled person in that spot. So those are all things that will kind of work themselves out of training camp, and that's what you want. You want a competitive training camp and kind of go from there. I think the top six, there still may be an opening in the top six, for somebody to come in there. And where does Kyle Connor fit in? There's another name that we need to look at. So it's going to be an interesting few days once they get going, and there's not a lot of time because training camp gets going, I think, on Friday on the ice, and the first preseason game is Monday. But that's where you get a real good look at the guys is in games and see where everybody fits in. But that's what you want. You want that competition there, and it will all work itself out. And the worst thing you want is players saying, well, I think I'm a skilled forward. I'm in the top. I should be in the top six, and I don't think there's any room for me in the top six. You come into camp and do what you do well, they'll find a spot for you. Don't worry about that end of it.
Dennis, the last 3 years up and down between the NHL and the A, Jonathan Drouin has been on the left wing. He last played center in junior from all I've understood here. How much of a stretch or how tall of an order is it for the Canadiens to parachute him down into top line center and expect him to be successful?
Well, I think that's putting a lot on him. Center ice in the National Hockey League, center ice at any level is not an easy position to play. And you can simplify your system as much as you want, but there's still lots of responsibility that falls on your center iceman. And I think Jonathan Drouin is intelligent enough of a hockey player that he can grasp eventually what needs to be done by an NHL centerman. But I just don't think it's going to come easily. And you know what happens? You come to camp, and Montreal's in a situation where they have excess wingers coming into camp. So this may be a situation where, look, let's throw him in the middle right now. Let's see what he can do, and let's take it from there. The other problem that comes in is Montreal's just not deep down the middle, especially when it comes to skill and top six or top nine, however you want to break it down. So that's kind of what they're looking for. Something tells us that when all is said and done, Jonathan Drouin ends up on the wing, which I think he's going to be more comfortable at. But It'll certainly be an interesting camp for him. They'll keep an eye on it, but some of that is just simply for the fact that Canadians just aren't deep up the middle.
So many fans, Dennis, are excited for this season and the potential of making the playoffs. And I look at this first month, if we can just fast forward past training camp, you'll get a pretty indication of where this team sits. When you look at that first month of October, Toronto at home, Calgary, Edmonton, Minnesota twice, Columbus twice, Pittsburgh twice. This is going to get started right away here for the Jets in that first month.
Well, it is very much so. I mean, the schedule has lots of positives, but there's no easy spots in the schedule, nor should there be when you look at it. And yes, I mean, Mark Scheifele's comments the last few days have been fairly clear as to what he thinks. And it's not that we want to make the playoffs, it's we have to make the playoffs. And there's no given that you make playoffs. And yes, I agree, the bar has been raised and it should be here. But then you start eliminating teams. If the Jets are going to get in, who's not going to be in, especially if you end up in a 4-4 scenario where it's 4 from one division, 4 from the other. So that's what makes that right off the get-go, that first road trip where they're into Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, because, you can have success in the division, which they have had, but it might take more than success in the division to find a spot in the final eight. And I don't think there's any question that inside that room, inside the offices of True North, all the way down from the top to the coaches to the GM. The expectation is that this team will be in the postseason this year, but to say it is one thing. You have to go out and do it, and it's the old adage that you can't make the playoffs in the first month of the NHL schedule, but you can sure as heck put yourself in a spot where it's going to be tough to make the playoffs with a bad first month. So they need to be ready to go, and every team will say that, and every player will say that. And again, it goes back to what we talked about before as far as penalties are concerned. It's one thing to talk the talk, but it comes time now, it's going to have to be to walk the walk, and you want to get off to that good start.
Good to talk to you again. Welcome back, and I'm sure we'll see you at the rink throughout training camp.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Good chatting, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
See you, Troy.
And once again, the Big Show will be at Bell MTS Iceplex this Friday live as training camp kicks off, and FanFest on Saturday. We'll have extensive coverage, interviews. Paul Maurice is going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll be live from 6 to 11 a.m., an extra hour of the show, the Big Show, on Friday out at Bell MTS Iceplex. Your NHL news and notes are next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity, September 22nd and 23rd, not too far off. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Tulf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you today on the Big Show at the top of the hour. More hockey talk. Jared Clinton of the Hockey News. Gus Katsaros at 8:30 today. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. An hour of your phone calls and lots to talk about. And, of course, another chance to qualify still to come for our Hockey Nights in Vegas. Grand prize draw going on over the next 2 months. Breaking news today, courtesy of Tony Marinaro. Rather, of TSN 690 in Montreal, the Alouettes have fired head coach Jacques Champtelain, who is also their OC, and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe is out as well. Still around.
That's basic insanity.
Still around is Anthony Calvillo,
who people thought was an OC, I think, last year, and now it was quarterback's coach this year. But to can your head coach, OC, and DC X number of days here before a game, and especially Noel Thorpe. Like, there's got to be Andrew Wettenhall, the owner's son, came out yesterday and said nobody's job is safe. It's interesting there. I wonder what role he's playing, the whole, daddy's team, and now he's stepping in and becoming more of a voice and stuff like that. Kavis Reid in his first year as GM, just an absolute mess in Montreal.
And Tony Marinaro now reporting that Jacques Champtelain and Noel Thorpe were at the office this morning when Cavis Reed fired them. It was done between 6 a.m. and 6:30 a.m. They were relieved of their duties. Another story out from TSN's Davis Sanchez saying that Rich Stubler was in town attending Montreal practices and games a couple of weeks ago. But at the time, he said he stays in touch with all the teams and goes to practices. But that's another name that could be out there. Do you think Calvillo gets it as head coach?
Well, from a... I got to watch this standpoint. Yeah, I don't know that I think he does. You know, I think it would be everybody, if asked about it with any sort of a football understanding or resume, would say no. He just doesn't have yet the resume as a coach to step into that role. But I would personally like to see it happen, to watch it. And boy, if there is a guy out there that could manage it and all the rest of it, you'd think that he would go in a long way. So long as he surrounded himself with, a Rich Stubler as his DC and a real strong OC, right? You're a figurehead there. You, as long as he appoints people that are really well-groomed and ready to be OC-DC, yeah, I think he could probably be successful at it, and I want to see it.
I hope he is. I mean, it would be great for the CFL and for Montreal.
For CFL, yeah.
I didn't know that they had... What is it, 6 coaches in 5 years now? Something like that.
Since
like
Trestman left in 2012.
That's why. I mean, even the Bombers' lean times didn't see that much turnover. But this whole news, the only thing I can think of is the Bombers need to do basically whatever it takes to get Noel Thorpe here ASAP. Like you said, Troy, don't even wait another whatever capacity you need to do to bring that guy in here, get it done. Because... I don't see a way that Noel Thorpe, having a big hand in how the defense plays week in and week out, wouldn't push the Bombers maybe just a step below what the Stampeders have.
So that's the latest breaking news of the Canadian Football League. To the NHL news and notes now. We started the show off this way, and we'll touch on it again. Calgary Flames have pulled out of negotiations with the city to build a new arena. Gary Bettman was at a board meeting with the Calgary Flames. He spoke yesterday, too, saying they've been trying this. It's not working. There is an election coming up in Calgary on October the 4th. They say they're not going to look to relocate, but yada, yada, yada. Where does this go in your guys' mind? Does it get built? Do they move? Are you worried about the Flames moving?
I don't think you can get worried about them moving just because this is the first absolute cannonball with all the splash here sort of thing, right? But certainly you could come to an understanding that this is high-stakes poker. The hearts of the heartstrings of Flames fans will be pulled this way and that way here, probably for an extended period of time. It'll seem somewhat torturous. And then hopefully everything, the bottom line to me is if the arena doesn't get built, then they will move. So can they come to some sort of an understanding eventually with the arena being built? We as Canadians hope so. But if it doesn't, there's all kinds of places that they could possibly move to at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, we've all seen this kind of circus play out before, right? Where all the bigwigs come out and they essentially predict gloom and doom, and oh, hey, look, a city has a shiny new arena ready to go. Like, we've all seen the script work itself out before. It just makes me sick hearing Bettman up there threatening another Canadian team when, to quote him when talking about the Coyotes last year, we're not giving up on this market, we still believe in them. Like, cut the horse crap already. Like, it just, I can totally understand Canadian fan fervor towards Bettman when he gets up there and condescendingly and snide and just the tone of his voice threatens to take away hockey from the markets that there shouldn't even be a discussion about whether or not they stay in. Yet you have him talking about the Carolinas and the Coyotes and the Florida Panthers like they're his little babies and he's got to do whatever he can to protect them. But the second that there's a little snafu in discussions in Calgary, it sounds like he can't wait to get them out the door and over to Seattle.
Yeah, I think this has politics written all over it, and I know that seems obvious, but as soon as this election is done in Calgary in October, I bet you, I don't know, I don't have anything to bet. I got Westy will eat his shorts or something.
Whoa, you can't bet that. Eat your own shorts, fella.
They start. I would never. They start renegotiating, and I understand this from a political point of view that spending taxpayers' money on something like this isn't going to help you get reelected. Once the election's over, I'll see where this goes. But it is interesting. On the same note, $600 million arena is getting the go-ahead in Seattle, and they don't have a team. So I think that is the league's 32nd National Hockey League team eventually. I don't think anybody would be moving, but it's interesting to see this and where it's gone in Calgary, in my mind, for sure. Also, Mark Scheifele saying they must make the playoffs says he can get better than scoring a point a game like he did last year. You buy into that? Is that too much pressure?
I don't. These guys, we don't. Most, you know, most people can't even come to an understanding. Like, what's pressure, right? Like, the pressure is all a matter of perception, and what Mark Scheifele perceives as pressure would be probably very much different from what I or you or anyone else understands it to be. These guys have been eating pressure for breakfast as high-level athletes for the last 15 or since they were basically 10 years old, right? So Mark Scheifele piling on a bunch of pressure onto his shoulders, you don't think he was doing that last year and the year previous and the moment he was drafted by this organization? All we've heard this cat do is strive to get better and improve his game. So you can expect it's going to happen at this point in time. If you want to question Mark Scheifele, you're probably a bit of a fool. But if he averages anything round a point a game, let's say he gets 75 points in 82 games, to me that's successful. If he does anything more than that, it's mind-blowing again. And maybe the ultimately what you want to see him do is be a little bit stronger, get better with the 200-foot game, and that just become that much more dominant. But you wonder just how much more of a step there is for him to take.
Yeah, I think what we've learned is to bet against Mark Scheifele is to be a fan of losing money, because every year he's found a way to get better, and not just like incrementally better, but by leaps and bounds better every single season. I need to see who he plays with first to get an understanding of what his production could be like, but if it's the Scheifele Ehlers Line A trio, I don't know how that's not the highest scoring line in hockey this year.
Ooh. Yeah, hey, like for real, who else? Who? How many challenges will they have? That'll make
I'll put
line.
My money. I'll put my money down on that.
Oh well, yeah, McDavid's line, Ben and Seguin, and I believe Radulov. Is that the?
I don't think
Ben and Seguin are playing together.
Yeah.
Not? Yeah, we'll have to look into that more. But I feel pretty good betting on Scheifele.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't see why it couldn't happen. It's going to be a very interesting season.
There is some chatter out of Dallas though. Ben Seguin in the middle with Radulov.
Yeah. Right? Well, the power play alone too.
Radulov.
We'll take a break and talk some more hockey with Jared Clinton of the Hockey News next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you. Another chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up. Gus Katsaros at the bottom of the hour. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about today. And get your thoughts on as we push towards Winnipeg Jets training camp this weekend out of Bell MTS Iceplex. So this segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, and it is with the Hockey News' Jared Clinton. Jared, how are you today?
Bad of yourself.
Good, thank you. We've been discussing the Bo Horvat contract in Vancouver, paying him $5+, and I understand the whole realm around this is the way the NHL is going, and those are the age of players that are going to start making the most money. Is it a good contract for Horvat going forward over the next couple of years? I mean, it's good for him. Let's not kid ourselves. But I guess, is he the guy when he's now making Brian Little money?
Yeah, I think that's the assumption, is that he's going to be the guy now. I think the thing that Sedin wrote for the Players Tribune just this past week, they really pointed to him as a guy who's already kind of grasped a leadership role, and they really want him to be the guy that's going to kind of carry the torch once Sedin's are done. I think he's already kind of developed. You know, we saw early in his career, they put him as a third-line center. Last year, they tried him as a second line, and I think we're looking at this year, he may even overtake the Sedins, you know, as that top-line player. He led the team in points last season, and I think they're just thinking that trajectory is going to continue. And the one good thing about Horvat, too, is, you know, you're not just looking at offense with him, and I think that's kind of an underrated aspect of his game sometimes. We look at the contract he got, you know, 50 points and $5.5 million. That kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you're reasoning it out. You know, if he's a UFA, he's probably not getting $5.5 million for 50 points. But, you know, you look at his two-way game and his defensive ability, and I think that's really what the Canucks want to hang their hat on, is the fact that he can be a guy that they use in all situations. And, you know, this is a contract, I think, that will look really good in, you know, 3-4 years, which I think is kind of the thing we're looking at now with RFAs when they sign, is we're looking at what this deal is going to look like down the line instead of what it looks like right now, because you're looking for good value when these players are in the real prime of their careers, and I think that's what you're going to get with Horvat.
Josh, with so much of the spotlight on the young players with the Winnipeg Jets on Patrick Laine, I think a lot of what Josh Morrissey accomplished last year went sort of underappreciated by the majority of Jets fans. It sets up to be a very interesting sophomore year for Josh Morrissey, and you just kind of wonder where he can take his game going forward.
Yeah. I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, when they signed Kulikov, you kind of look at it as, okay, that's an interesting signing. He can be a replacement somewhere, but you kind of think, okay, well, where does Morrissey fit in then? Because is he a number five now, or is he still a second pairing guy? Or, you know, they're projecting to have Myers healthy, of course, all season. So it makes the defense stronger, certainly having Kulikov there. But having Morrissey as well is, I think, really the piece that maybe puts his blue line over the top. He played a lot of really heavy minutes last year for a guy who maybe wasn't expected to do so. And I think he really impressed in those minutes. I was impressed myself. You know, the way he carries the puck, the way he can move the puck offensively is just something that I think really helps this team. And I think playing with speed is the Jets' maybe their biggest asset right now, you know, aside from the youthful skill. And I think Morrissey really brings that speed to the back end, so he can really push the play for the Jets in a way that a lot of their defensemen can't. I think, you know, going forward, we're looking at a team that's probably going to be without, I think we can safely assume, going to be without Toby Enstrom after this season. So I think Morrissey more than fills that role once Enstrom goes. And I think we're looking at a defenseman in Morrissey who is probably going to be, you know, a number three in the future if he's not already making kind of the strides to be that number three as soon as late this season.
Do you foresee Morrissey, because I think he can be offensive, and I think as the years roll on, he'll be on the power play. Do you foresee that happening this year?
Yeah, I think he's like a perfect guy for the second unit right now. Obviously, you're going to have a tough time cracking that top unit, especially with the way that they can set up with, you know, overloading it with four forwards if they really want to. But I think as a second power play guy, maybe as a trigger man on the back end, it's kind of a lot of pressure to put him in the quarterback role on a power play unit right now. But there's no reason they can't test it. There's no reason they can't test it and see what he can bring. You know, he was an offensive guy in junior. He can move the puck really, really well. You know, that's one of the things that's most impressive about his game. So if he's able to find that playmaking passing ability on the power play, he can really spread out a penalty kill and move the puck into areas where there's space, and that can pay big dividends for the Jets.
Jared, Rick Nash is in an interesting period of his career here, heading into this is final year of a contract where he's getting paid $7.8 million. He's had a couple of disappointing years. Your thoughts on where Rick Nash is at?
This is really make-or-break territory for Nash. You think about him as kind of a guy that's – if you think about Eric Staal when he signed last year with the Wild – Staal was, you know, coming off of a down year. He was disappointing, to say the least, in New York when they traded for him. Then he went on to sign a contract that, you know, was half or less than half of what he was earning the year prior. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with Rick Nash right now. He's at that age, 32, that he's really out of his prime. And I think it's pretty clear that he's out of his prime because his offensive consistency is just, you know, it's disappeared. He was only two seasons removed from a 42-goal season, but even still, like, he hasn't even reached that 42 goals in the past two seasons combined now. So we're looking at a guy who's probably more a 15- to 20-goal guy now than the 40-goal guy that we saw 2 years ago, and I think that's that's kind of where we're going to look at him when he's a free agent this summer, because at the money he makes right now, there's no way New York's going to bring him back. And I think New York needs to get rid of him, honestly, just because that team needs a kind of a refresh up front. And I think Nash is the final piece to be gone before that refresh really takes hold. I imagine when Nash hits the open market, we're not looking at a guy who's going to earn $5-6 million anymore. He's probably going to be a lot more palatable for those guys, for those teams that want to sign a veteran guy who can probably chip in on a second or third line and give you 15 or 20 goals. So I think that's kind of where we're at with Nash, is that he's no longer the top line superstar player that he once was. But he can still contribute. I just don't know if he's going to be, you know, even a 25 goal guy anymore.
Jared Clinton of the Hockey News joining us on the Big Show this morning, 11 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. Ryan Ellis out 4 to 6 months, expected to be back around the beginning of January, and the debate continues with the Predators defense, the Calgary Flames defense, and I'll throw in the Winnipeg Jets with their depth on D if everybody's healthy. Who has the best defense core with Ryan Ellis being out 4 to 6 months?
With Ryan Ellis, I would think you probably lean a little bit more towards Calgary. But that's not to say Nashville's completely depleted now that Ellis is out. You know, Calgary has depth because they have, you know, five guys up front who can probably play top line minutes. But I think Nashville still has, you know, Subban, Ellis, Josi, Ekholm. And then, with Ellis out, you kind of slot Emelin into that spot. So that gives you a top four that's maybe not as strong as it was when they guided a team pretty much single-handedly to a Stanley Cup final, but you look at Emelin and what he brings, and he brings a physicality that blue line doesn't have. So it gives the blue line a different look, that's for sure. But he still can provide second pairing minutes and steady second pairing minutes. He's done it for a few seasons now in Montreal. You know, it was a smart acquisition by David Poile, especially knowing what he knew before any of us knew about Ellis's health. And I think it gives them a different look and still makes that defense solid. I think the one important thing that nobody really thinks about too is that third pairing in Nashville with Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber, that's still a pretty solid pairing. They're not going to play more than 14, 15 minutes a game on a regular basis. But there was a period last season where, as an injury replacement, Matt Irwin played, you know, 20 minutes a night for a 20-game stretch. And that was a productive stretch for the Predators, too. They were one of the better teams in the league over that stretch, and Irwin was taking on heavy minutes. So I think we underrate the depth, if that's even possible, of the Predators' defense. But, you know, with Ellis out, I think you do have to still give the nod to the Flames as having the best D-core in the league right now.
Jared, a lot of chatter out of the center of the universe talking about just how many years until the Leafs hoist a cup, and most focus on Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. But when you look at the team and you wonder what their ceiling might be in the near future, you wonder how much of a step Riley can take, and also a guy like Nikita Zaitsev. You just wonder where might he bring his game to this year?
Yeah, I think he's set to take even a bigger step forward. I think, you know, everyone does, like you said, talk about Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, but the play of Zaitsev last year was one of the stories there. One of the big stories there. Offensively, the Maple Leafs had been good in years prior, but defensively, it was just a mess. And I think having a guy like Zaitsev, who had that experience playing against men in the KHL, had that experience, you know, playing in important games in the KHL, coming in really changed the look of that defense quite a bit. He gave them somebody who, instead of having to rely on just two defensemen, Riley and Gardner, they had a third option there to kind of solidify the first and the second pairings. And I think that's really what that team needed, because they could have all the offense in the world, but if you don't insulate your goaltender, you know, at all, you're just going to get blown apart. And I think that's exactly what Zaitsev was able to offer them. As far as taking a step forward this season, I think he just needs to kind of work on more consistency. He had a lot of really, really good games, but he also had some games where he was off by a little bit. And I think just getting those and ironing those games out of his system is what's really going to take him to the next level. And I think in Toronto, of all places, you know, having Mike Babcock to be your coach is about the best thing you can ask for if you're a young player that's actually trying to, you know, make sure you don't make mistakes and play mistake-free hockey.
Jared, we appreciate your time. Great stuff as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys.
Awesome stuff, Jared. Thanks so much.
at THN Jared Clinton on Twitter. And this was a presentation of Olympic Homes, this segment, the Ready to Move specialists. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up.
Just seeing Kavis Reid will take over in Montreal.
He will,
and,
eh?
And we're talking, you know, when you see guys like Chapdelaine and Noel Thorpe go season and just kind of, you know, it's saying here that Didier Omerjou's coming out saying multiple sources told me it's been war between Kavis Reid and Chapdelaine since training camp. So an emotional situation exploded, and bam, you see this remarkable change.
Interesting. So it's not so much a case of him wanting to be a head coach again. It's a case of they didn't get along.
Well, I suppose Kavis Reid is a GM, maybe trying to push his thoughts on how they should be approaching things from a coaching staff, and a coach isn't going to want to hear from the GM. Kavis Reid coached in the CFL for a long time before becoming GM, right? So if Chapdelaine, if they can have that clash and not staying in each other's lane sort of thing, who knows? We saw Jim Popp in Montreal as the GM wanting to be a coach for a long time. Maybe Kavis Reid wants to try and handle both jobs as well.
Yeah, power corrupts, doesn't it? Funny how that works. But, I mean, you look at Montreal's roster and what's holding them back this year?
Decent quarterback play. Yeah.
That's it. If they had a bell. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For every all football teams, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's keeping them not only from being a good team, but from running away with the East. Like, they should be well above 500 with the defense that they have and some of the skill players they have on offense. It's just Darian Durant, and when Drew Willie gets in there, neither of them have been anywhere near competent enough.
And Greg Quick will be calling the defense and Anthony Cavillo up to OC now.
Anthony Cavillo, OC. Who's on defense, sorry?
Greg Quick, Greg Quick was the D-line coach.
So there you go. Jacques Chapdelaine out as head coach and OC in Montreal. Noel Thorpe out as DC. Kavis Reid will be interim head coach, the current general manager, and Calvillo and, sorry?
Greg Quick.
Greg Quick. There it is. I got it right now. Defensive line coach taking over as DC. Big changes in Montreal. They host Ottawa this Sunday on TSN, of course. We'll take a break when we come back. Your next chance to qualify for you-know-what. Coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Now's the time, 780-1290. TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. Sending Kevin Williams and four other lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights at T-Mobile Arena on the 10th of November. That's a Friday. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Vegas, four nights accommodations right on the strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays. It's 7:15 and right now at 8:15 a.m. on The Big Show. On the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15 and on the afternoon ride at 5:15. Also, keep in mind the bonus chances to qualify online. We did one on Monday on our Facebook page at TSN 1290, and we'll do so again next week. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Kevin was our big winner on this Monday. Our next grand prize winner will be Monday, September 25th, then October the 9th, the 23rd of October, and again on the 6th of November. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290, us here on The Big Show, and everybody else that we are qualifying. Now, just for qualifying, of course, you get a Jets Gear gift card on our online qualification Monday on Facebook. We spun the magic wheel, and the Jets Gear gift card was worth $80.
Yeah.
So congratulations
nice
to
spin,
Don.
Wicks.
Ruwicki had the
got
spin
the touch,
there.
Baby.
I'm telling you. Actually, you know what? There's the Price is Right coming to Winnipeg
you
shortly.
Dang near ripped the
yeah,
wheel
I
off
I
want to
go
sucker.
To that.
I'm going to be there.
Is
and
it
I
really
have been
coming
practicing.
For real?
Yeah, for real.
Really?
I comes to I figured... Regent Casino
cool.
Event Center.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, I got a touch with the wheel.
Who here hasn't won a... Who here hasn't wanted to be
wink?
On
that was
The Price is Right? Did you just wink at Westwood?
Cool.
I've got a thing
feels.
With
I
the wheel, that. You said?
Right and then, the feels, man.
Wow. Selling it big time. We need to get this show on TV so people can see the Ruwicki wink. Who's the 12th caller through?
It is Doug DeClaire.
Doug DeClaire. Congratulations, sir. You are the latest qualifier. And, of course, just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card. And we'll be in for our next four grand prize draws on September 25th, 9th, and 23rd of October, and the 6th of November.
I think Duclair, we got to go Dukes. Let's go Dukes.
Oh, yeah.
Dukes. Duker?
The Dukes.
Duker's lazy. Dukes. That'll be interesting. Continuing the clips from Kevin Cheveldayoff's conversation with TSN hockey insider Bob McKenzie. Here's Kevin Cheveldayoff on the cap situation for the Winnipeg Jets.
So, you know, we did pay $4 million in performance bonuses last year. There's probably no reason to think that we wouldn't pay that again, given the type of players that we have and we believe the years that they're going to have. So you have to be careful. You have to budget accordingly or else it does come off your cap the following year. But I think, again, going back to when we took the team over, people asked us, are you going to be a salary cap team? And right from the beginning, Mark Chipman and the ownership group has said, when we need to be, we will. And we're getting to that point. We have some extensions that we have to do. We're going to have to plan accordingly. We're going to have to get creative at some points in time. You might have to do more bridge deals. You might have to do, different type of situations. I don't know yet how those are going to unfold. But we have the ownership's commitment that, the resources are going to be there to make sure that when this team is good, it's going to be good for a while.
Trust me, when Patrick Laine gets extended, I think you're going to be a cap team.
I'll be a very happy guy.
Imagine the line of Scheifele, Laine, Ehlers. Game 78 this season, and the boys are white hot in a wicked playoff battle and all the rest of it. And yeah, they're going to be out there winning, and they're playing everything with the team and all the rest of it. But a little, psst. Hey, Scheifs, I need three more assists for $400,000. But like, what? $4 million in performance bonuses. How awesome is that, man?
That's for Ehlers and Laine. It's $2 million. Each is what they cashed in last year.
Do we know? I would love to see the what exactly it was. That's so cool, man.
I think one was for 30.
He had the big one for the 30th, like 200 or 250.
Yeah, he had ones that set in for 20, for 30.
How sweet is that?
Let's see if I can look that up.
How cool is that? That's just cool stuff.
I remember when they would kick in. Remember the 20th one or something when he missed an empty net or something? We're like, that just cost him. Yeah. $250K, and then of course the next game, I believe he got it.
There
so
could be some performance bonuses this year.
Cap space left is 7.338334. So with those bonuses kicking in, that leaves just over 3.3 million in cap space. The forwards currently take up $30,444,167. The defense corps take up $28,259,166. The goaltenders, for the three of them, Hutchinson, Hellebuck, and Mason, cost an even 7.5 mil.
There's no team in the NHL that spends more on its defense as a percentage of the salary cap than your Winnipeg Jets.
And there's a buyout from Mr. Mark Stewart as well, which we didn't talk about this in the news and notes. I was going to bring it up. Mark Stewart will attend Chicago Blackhawks training camp on a PTO contract.
Wow, that's a great opportunity. That's cool.
And they need some depth on the blue line. We'll have to see if he makes it. But Mark Stewart, we were talking about where he was at and if he wanted to keep playing or what he wanted to do. A lot of people thought that maybe he would take a coaching position or some kind of thing within the organization. Clearly still wants to play. He's going to attend Blackhawks training camp on a PTO.
When you look at the upcoming, I know that Enstrom is, this is his last season. His last season of his current contract anyway. But when you look at the way things are situated for the Jets D and the thought of Trouba possibly signing a pretty juicy contract, Morrissey as an RFA upcoming here, and you wonder what kind of contract he's going to get. It does set up pretty interestingly here for the Jets. 41.99% of their cap in the D, and the next closest are the San Jose Sharks at 37.69. And there's a bunch of teams at 37%, 36%, 35%. So not only are the Jets spending the most on defense, by a mile they're spending the most on defense. And you wonder, if they were able to land Trouba to a long-term contract, think of the ramifications for the percentage of salary cap to that.
We got a break. We'll talk more hockey with Gus Katsaros coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the big show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, Jim Tolt, Troy Wesser, Brandon Rewicki, and Glendale Golf and Country Club, the home course of the big show throughout this golf season. Still time to get a round in. They'll be open until October. But, of course, they are allowing you to get memberships for next year. And the clubhouse is open year-round, so you can go out for dinner. Also a great place with Glendale's scenic view. The Assiniboine River and Riverside Terrace provides a beautiful and private location for outdoor events, barbecues, cocktail hour, and host weddings throughout the season as well. Make sure you check out Glendale Golf and Country Club. Now is the time. Now is your chance. Memberships available.
Sweet tweet that I'm seeing on Gus Katsaros' timeline from Lady Hannah Stewart. Perhaps my dream of the Seattle Grunge and their flannel jerseys will finally come true. That's a pretty sweet name right there.
Seattle Grunge. That is flannel jerseys too. That is an idea. Just throwing it out there. Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com joins us right now. Gus, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, guys. Can you imagine Dave Grohl being the goalie of those?
I do see Dave Grohl sitting there with a towel waving above his head, just like we see in Nashville, but from the grunge scene.
And I tell you what, brother, like Nashville can stick it with their anthem singers. I'll take Seattle's any day of the week.
Kevin Dillon and the cast of Singles showing up to drop the puck on opening night would be great to see. Let's start there, Gus. Calgary announces that they're done negotiating or trying to get a new deal with the city of Calgary done on the same day, and they said it was purely coincidence because they just were having a board meeting. Regardless of the announcement in Seattle. But I can't imagine Bettman didn't know this arena deal in Seattle wasn't going to be announced. Your thoughts on both?
Well, it kind of seems like one of the situations is a little more political and the other is just a matter of optics. I mean, the NHL can't possibly be operating without the knowledge of what is going on in their marketplace across the continent. So I would figure that they would have been, if not kept abreast, being close contact with what was happening in Seattle. The Calgary situation just seems to be more of a political issue, something about who's essentially to pay for the arena. So it's something a little bit above and beyond really my scope.
Gus, I keep thinking about this move by Montreal and their announcement to have Drouin play center, where he hasn't played center since junior. Last 3 years, up and down between the league and the A on the left wing there. And it just, like, up against the very best the NHL is going to have to offer and in a position that he's not recently familiar with, and certainly a big-time step from anything he did at junior at that position. Do you think they're a little bit out of their mind in pushing him and asking him to sort of just sort of parachuting into that spot?
Well, out of their mind seems to be the right phrase here because, you know, even though he has played in junior, the NHL game is a little bit different. The pace, the urgency, the requirements of positional hockey is very different in regards to where they would be here in the NHL versus his junior days. At the same time, he's shown some struggles in terms of positioning and you know, his forte is holding on to the puck and making plays and really being an electric player, doing things that will bring fans out of their seats, which not necessarily translates to being a good centerman. You know, they already have an option, and now it's Galchenyuk that they haven't really fully explored. I know that the major sentiment coming out of Montreal is they don't want to do that. And they'd rather try to pursue, I guess, a more skilled option at center. But I'm not sure that the experiment is worth the aggravation to put a skilled player who's going to be put into the spotlight, expected to perform above and beyond what he's currently capable of. I think just the fact that he's in Montreal at this point, the pressure has to be immense. And then to put him in a position where it's going to be a learning experience rather than a demonstration of his skill, it's going to put, I think, even more pressure on him. So it's going to be interesting to see just how long he actually does stay as a number one center.
What's your read on Montreal and their lineup? I don't find them very deep on forward. They arguably have the best goalie in the league, and I'm not too sure about their defense. I understand they're the Montreal Canadiens. I'm not buying into a lot of their team depth-wise.
It was interesting to hear Marc Bergevin talk about how mobility on the defense is the blueprint that they wanted to move into, yet he completely is dismantled the entire all the mobility that they had entering into this season. It seems like it's going to be a much more stationary crew. I would expect a lot more dump outs. I would expect a lot more neutral zone battles if that's the case. And you're kind of right. They're a little thin up front. It's going to be difficult to find some scoring. I expect a little bit more from some depth guys like Arturi Lehkonen could probably step up a little bit, but that's still not enough. They're going to have to win 2-1 games, and in order to win those 2-1 games, Carey Price is going to have to be amazing. The blue line is going to just have to hold it together and get pucks out to forwards that are probably dashing and moving in the opposite direction in transition. And you're not going to see a lot of contributions, I feel, from the blue line. Shea Weber will contribute on the power play, but I can't see a lot more offensive contributions coming from the back end there.
Gus, with Erik Karlsson saying that he's taking his time, he's going to be coming back healthy, 100% healthy, he's not going to be pushing at all, and maybe he's out of the lineup until November type of a thing, with the role and the impact, the profound impact he has with the Sens, that could be their death knell for any sort of playoffs, couldn't it?
Yeah, that absolutely could. It's a devastating thought to think that they're going to be starting without their best defenseman and best player. The Sens essentially kind of roll with the way that Karlsson rolls. So if he's not at his best, the Sens aren't at their best, or at least they can't potentially be at their best. To take him out of the lineup for an indefinite period of time could already be a death knell to a playoff spot early in the season if they really just come out of the gate flat. I guess coaching staff is going to have to figure out a way to kind of weather the storm and make tweaks and hope that they were able to carry over some of the playoff type of system and play that they were using there to carry them up until the point where they finally do get their star back. But, man, if they falter coming out of the gate, the Sens could find themselves out of playoff contention and in a very difficult spot early on in the season.
We were talking about Steve Simmons' column and on TSN 1050 in Toronto, talking about the Leafs 2 to 3 years Stanley Cup champions. Your impressions of that, and is it feasible?
Well, I mean, I don't want to put a window of 2 or 3 years. Everybody seems to do that. Yet we all talk about how much parity there is in the league, and a different team goes to the Stanley Cup final every year. So putting a window just because of being a young team, I think might be a little constrictive. I feel that they're on their steps on their way to contention. This is going to be a critical year to see just did everything that happened last year happen because it was a combination of the skilled players and the coaching staff's vision, or was it just because the NHL wasn't ready for them, the kids overachieved, whatever the case is. So this is going to be a critical year to see where they actually are heading and how much work really needs to be done. Having said all that, it's a much younger league. These are not just young prospect kids. There's a lot of skilled talent and things that you can build around. They're definitely Stanley Cup contenders at some point, maybe not this year, but it's definitely not going to be something where you're looking 5, 6, 7 years down the road. They have an opportunity to capitalize on good contracts, skilled young players, and the ability to perhaps attract some talent in the offseason or through trades to come and augment this already skilled lineup to potentially push them into that Stanley Cup contention even closer. So I haven't read Simmons' column. I understand the headline and the premise, but to me, I feel that they've done enough to attract quality players to be better overall a lot sooner.
Gus, there is a fairly strong, sort of a combination of optimism and absoluteness in that the Jets have to get above the playoff line this year for Jets Nation. And Jets fans look at it and they look at Steve Mason and have fairly lofty or demanding expectations of what he's going to do, although he was one percentage point higher than the guy that was criticized wildly in his second year last year in Connor Hellebuyck with a save percentage. And they look at the discipline situation and all the penalties the Jets took and somehow think that's got to get better, although the Jets over the last 4 years have been 25th, 30th, 27th, and 28th in power play opportunities allowed. And they look at this Team D and say, hey, this with the same players mostly and the same coaches, that's got to get a lot better, and think all that's going to come together for them to be something above the playoff line. Are Jets fans drinking too much Kool-Aid?
Well,
I'm going to give you the Leafs as an example here, simply because everything revolves around the Leafs, right? I didn't expect, and I'm sure that most people did not expect Toronto to get into the playoffs last year. They did it on the back of structure and faltering. Teams around them had to take heavy nosedives in order for them to end up being in contention. Somehow I feel that Winnipeg, while being a playoff contender and doing all the little things that to improve the goaltending, the better defensive play, the more striking offense, being able to insert players like Kyle Connor with a definitive impact in their first year, I think they also will need some teams to falter, Chicago to fall flat, Minnesota to fall flat, St. Louis to fall flat. We can extend that to other teams in the conference. So it's not just an individual element of the Jets performing well enough to make the playoffs. I think that there are enough critical outside factors to enable whether or not they will make the playoffs. And those have to be similar to what happened in Toronto last year. Teams around them faltering enough for them to take advantage of that and push themselves into a contention.
Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Do you see that happening, Gus?
Well, I mean, I've expected the downfall of the Chicago Blackhawks for two seasons now. We're going to go for three, so we'll see where we go there. Minnesota somewhat overachieved. St. Louis is still a little bit of an enigma. I like St. Louis, but I still have some reservations about whether or not they can be anything above and beyond just a playoff contender. So, yeah, absolutely anything is possible. You have teams like the Sharks that are faltering, the Kings that are faltering. There are lots of teams that can take a serious enough nosedive to be able to push the Jets into a different direction.
Great stuff as always, Gus. Thanks for your time and enjoy the rest of your week.
Pleasure is always mine, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care. That's a real interesting angle to look at this is with the Jets, like which is it more going to be a part of the Jets improving in those areas, or is it going to be more reliant on those teams faltering within the Central to give them the opportunity?
I think it's a combination.
Yeah, well, for sure it's going to be a combination, but which comes into play if they're able to climb that playoff line mountain?
It's got to be improvement within.
I was just going to say, we've hardly talked about that. We talk about Mason, we talk about Kulikov, we talk about Myers coming back, but just the general, you know, we had Milt Stegall on the other day, and I was thinking of a conversation I had with him a couple of years ago when I ran into him. He was back in town for something, and he asked me about the Jets, and he said, can they get better and stuff? He goes, can hockey get better if they stay together? And I said, yes, like they can grow and develop as a unit.
You think we've hardly talked about that?
Well, have we ever sat down and said collectively we just think the team within itself will get better?
Yeah, I think everybody's always said that. Everyone's expecting that. But what's scary to me is with the amount of youth and maybe sort of minus Chicago. I know Minnesota's an old team, but everyone's thinking that for Dallas. People in St. Louis are thinking that for St. Louis. You know, Nashville, same sort of thing. There's another sort of pie in the sky, intangible thing that needs to occur and everyone hopes occurs here, including we hear Mike Scheifele talk about it yesterday.
Yeah, I meant more so just improvement from within as a team, like just getting better at the areas they need to get better at. Because, like, there's certainly reason for Chicago to come back to the pack a little bit, and you can make the cases for those other teams, but it's not like the Jets are so close that, hey, if those two teams just fall back, the Jets will slide in. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to there's a number of issues that need to get a lot better, combined with maybe a bit of regression for the other teams for the Jets to sneak in.
How strong the Pacific is a big part of that as well, right? Now, I guess that's part of the regression thing. Like, is it going to be four teams from the Pacific just three? Because that five
I think it's four. I honestly think it's four because the Central teams are going to beat up on each other.
Well, if it's four, then that becomes that much more difficult for the Jets to get above the line, huh?
See, and I think Anaheim, when you look at division play, can consistently beat LA, can consistently beat San Jose, and that hasn't always been the case there as well. I agree exactly with what Gus said. I think that Minnesota and the style they play, as successful as they were, is hard to do for 82 games. I don't see them, and they exceeded some expectations. St. Louis is a question mark to me. I don't know if they're going to be good or if they're going to be bad. And I just, as I've said on record, I don't see Chicago depth-wise, and if they get any injury whatsoever, being the same Chicago team they have. And I could, especially defensively, they invited Mark Stewart on a PTO. I don't see them on paper, and once everything gets going, even making the playoffs, let alone being anywhere as dominant as they have been.
I think it's 1 year in the last 10 that a Bruce Boudreaux coach team has not gone over 100 points. So expecting something less from Minnesota might be a little foolhardy.
I don't know.
But the Chicago and the Chicago thing, everyone's it's like the end of the world thing, huh? Everyone's predicting it. Next year. Well, maybe everybody's right this year.
It's going to happen 1 year, right? Like yeah. It's going to happen eventually. It's just is this. There's look. I don't know if it happens, but there's no doubt that they are the most vulnerable they've been in. I don't know, 5-6 years.
I haven't predicted them to be vulnerable until this year. When I look at their, it was eventually going to catch up to them with the cap, much like it did with the LA Kings.
They can lose 15 points and still be sitting there with 94.
I mean, the LA Kings have Jonathan Quick. Do you not see the same thing happening to the Blackhawks? And they and the Kings didn't make the playoffs. Like, they have Corey Crawford. They have they're just...
Like an injury, you mean?
They have Anze Kopitar. They have, like, they just... don't have the depth. The cap caught up to them, and they had to get rid of some guys, and they went with some youth that just aren't as good as the Stanley Cup championship teams. Like, it wasn't a quick slide. It was 2 to 3 seasons. That's what happens when you win the cup, and that's what I just see happening with Chicago right now.
Well, you can't... I'm a little confused in what you're saying there. I don't know. Has the slide begun yet in Chicago just because they got swept out of the playoffs? Hey, look at their regular season. Are we to assume the slide has started already?
Well, look at how many – look at Van Riemsdyk has gone on the defense. They have no cap space whatsoever. I believe they still have to make a move, don't they, or two?
Yeah, it's a typical Stan Bowman offseason where a couple
Panarin's
guys you've
up.
Never heard of before will step up and they'll be household names
who?
By the end of December. I don't know who, but I'm willing, that's a show me. That's a very similar to the New England Patriots thing to me.
Like
you're going to tell me that they're at the end? I need to see that before I buy that.
Patrick Sharp's going to contribute like he used to back in the day. I don't see that happening. I just...
But they can, Jim, they can drop, they can lose 15, they can be 15 points worse than last year and be sitting there with 95 points.
They very well could be, but can the Jets be 15 points better than they were last year?
No.
Why not?
I just think that's a big ask. 15 points better?
Why don't we let that marinate?
Yeah.
That's 7 wins. Or 4 wins and a couple overtime points.
7 wins a lot, bro.
We'll take a break. Much to get to. I think we just did. Tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll do it again next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza fan line wide open, 780-1290. And you can text us your thoughts on the conversations at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Do you think the Flames would leave Calgary? Your thoughts on the arena deal and Seattle? Mark Scheifele says expectations are at an all-time high. They must make the playoffs. And he thinks he can be better and can lead the league in scoring, as he once was at one point during the season last year. And, of course, what we were talking about, Jets get in the playoffs in your mind? Do they? And if so, who's out? And changes in Montreal. They are now on their 6th head coach in the past 5 years, as Jacques Champtelain and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe have been let go. Kavis Reid, the GM, takes over, and Mr. Anthony Calvillo is the OC. Lots of changes there. Continuing the conversation, gentlemen, should be interesting. Jets get in or no?
I don't have them making the playoffs, no. I do expect them to be considerably better than they have been. But when I look at the other teams in the Central, I see just a remarkable scrap and battle cannibalization within the division itself. And I just, even if there's 5 teams going, I have a lot of problem the way that Huss and Rick Ralph were looking at it last week. When I look and I say, well, okay, if the Jets are in, who's all coming out? Where people, including Wicks, picking Dallas to win the Central. So I got to catapult Dallas above Winnipeg. And then I got to start looking and sifting and where and who is Winnipeg going to get by, and with the deficiencies and with more or less the same sort of group here, they're going to accomplish these two or three fairly substantial things without really making much change. So I have a bit of trouble putting them in above the playoff line. I hope it happens, but I think they're just on the outside looking in after a ferocious battle.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way you could have a 45-goal scorer, a guy who can get 90 points down the middle, 25-minute and 8-young defenseman, and a solid goal. I don't know if that combination keeps you out. I think the Jets get in, and I think it's on the strength of Mark Scheifele, and I think it's on the strength of Steve Mason. And if Connor Hellebuyck wants to help out, that would be great too. But I think those things, and you have that right side of the defense, hopefully – If that stays healthy too, it would take some remarkable failures on special teams and in their own end to keep this team out of the playoffs. I think they find a way, and I think they finish third, to be honest.
We'll take a break, take your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or back with, I should say, on the Big Show, TSN-1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're talking about the changes in the Canadian Football League in Montreal, head coaches. Defensive coordinators out. Who's coming in? Mark Scheifele, expectation about being better and leading the league in scoring. And, of course, the expectations for the Jets. Do they get in? Do they not? As training camp gets underway at Bell MTS Iceplex this weekend. Also, the Flames arena deal. No longer pursuing a new arena with the city. Doesn't look like it's going to work out. We'll see where that goes. New arena in Seattle as well. And Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun, saying the Leafs are 2 to 3 years away from winning the Stanley Cup. In the next 2 to 3 years, they will be Stanley Cup champions, Steve Simmons says. And we asked the question, who wins the Stanley Cup first, the Oilers, the Flames, the Leafs, or the Jets? The four Canadian teams that we feel are just stacked. But will it happen? 780-1290. Jeff, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
First of all, I like what Scheifele said. I have no problem with it at all. It's like Mark Messier going to New York Rangers, and he said, let's win the Stanley Cup, and they all sort of went, oh, no, we don't talk about that here. There's too much pressure because of a 54-year drought or whatever. He goes, what do you mean? That's what we're here for. So I like Scheifele's attitude right off the start. I don't think Calgary leaves. The Flames leave Calgary at all. What I'm curious, though, is why do they need a new stadium, a new arena? Like, if the Jets can make it with the MTS Center, what's wrong with the Saddle Dome? Like, how many luxury boxes do they have?
Well, the Saddle Dome was not built properly to begin with, and I believe it was rushed in 83 for the Flames and then the Olympics. I've been in the Saddle Dome several times. It's not laid out properly. It is very old, like the design of it. And it's basically was outdated within a decade for everything. Now, can it still work? Can it still function? I believe so. But whether it's – I think it needs a whole bunch of renovations too, and it's the old adage of, do you want to put $200 million into a building that, you know, isn't going or should just be, you know, built brand new or not? It's just very old and outdated despite its age.
Okay. I don't think Quebec City will ever get a team.
You don't, eh?
I agree with you, man.
Montreal, it's just the same as Hamilton will never get a team. Toronto doesn't want to split their revenue. Montreal does not want to split their revenue. There's no way Montreal will allow a team in Quebec City.
That's interesting.
Just like the old WHA days. You guys don't... I remember when WHA came into the NHL. Toronto and Montreal blocked it, and Montreal was owned by Molson at the time, and that was the first time I started to drink O Vienna, and it was like yuck.
And your life changed for the better or the worse?
It was terrible, and
What about the Battle of Alberta? What about, like, the whole rivalry thing and everything else? They've got an arena there, and it's a Canadian market. And, I mean, you can't get in the building now. I get what you're saying about merchandise and everything else, that kind of dollar. But
the other factor is Ottawa. Ottawa does not want to have another team in that market. Just like Buffalo doesn't want a team in Hamilton, and neither does Toronto. So I don't think Quebec will ever get a team.
All right, Jeff. Jets get in this year?
Well, yeah. On the Jets, if Mason returns to form, if you look at goals for and goals against, last year every team that made the playoffs had a significant difference in goals for. So if the Jets maintain their scoring average, just maintain it. But if Mason gets back to form and Hellebuck just improves a bit on his goals against average, the goals for and goals against difference is now like a positive 30 or so.
It was minus 7 last year.
Minus 7 last year, okay. So they bump up maybe 20, 30 goals for. They're in the playoffs, no problem, and I think they go to the second round.
All right, Jeff, we appreciate it. Good stuff. Lots to talk about. Thanks for taking the time on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show. And also you can text us your thoughts at 1290-90 with standard message rate supplying. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Norm. Well.
Hey, Troy. I think Troy's wrong this time. I think the Jets are going to make it. You know why? It's because last year they never really said that they were going to go into the playoffs, and this year they say they are, and that's why they're going to make it. You're going to see a different team, a different ambition to get to the playoffs. I think they're going to be the surprise of a lot of teams in this league. They're going to make it, guys.
Mentality is a good point. Yeah.
It's a all right, point, Norm.
Right. It's a good start, and I agree with you, Norka. Coming into camp, it's real evident that this team, there's just a different mentality. There's different expectations with all the Jets fans, and there seems to be a different mentality with the guys coming into camp. Man, that's exciting.
Thanks for the call, Norm, on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Ron.
Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
You guys talk about the Jets making the playoffs, and I do believe they will make the playoffs. And I think it comes down, and you guys talking about different things, but it's about attitude and what they expect out of themselves and expect for this team to do. And I really do believe these guys are going to make it. Troy, you make some good points about the Central and how tough it could be. I think there's going to be some teams that drop off in the Central, like St. Louis. Maybe there will be a hangover with Nashville. You know, and the way I look at it, and I was talking to a friend yesterday, it's a wait-and-see situation, really, if you look at it. Let's wait and see what happens in the first 20 games, and then we can reevaluate then. But I just love the, you know, let's rise together. The guys are buying in, and I know we haven't even started training camp yet, but I do believe that these guys will make it. And I just wanted to touch on the Montreal situation with Noel Thorpe. The Bombers, I hope, already have made a phone call to this guy. And unfortunately, Richie Hall is going to be the guy out. Seems like a nice guy. We always talk about, oh, he's a stand-up guy. Or in any sport, that guy's a stand-up guy. But is he getting it done? And Noel Thorpe will get it done if we can get him in Winnipeg. So you guys can comment, and I'll talk to you guys later. Have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Ron.
You know, I don't know that I've ever seen, have any of us ever seen a coach get fired and then a situation here where, you know, you got a team that's 8-3, and you bring in that coach that was fired to take over for a DC. Like I can't recall ever seeing that, but and you think of the relationship here with Mike O'Shea and just knowing the kind of guy he is with, and the coaches in general, like the brotherhood that they got with Richie Hall and stuff. that's something that exists there. And then I take a step back from that, and it's a cold-hearted one, similar to what you're touching on there, Ron. And, man, that's an – I hate saying it because Richie Hall is a real nice guy and stuff. But when you got Noel Thorpe out there, and you don't know, like, who knows what he wants to do right now, right? Does he's collecting checks from the Owls. I don't know how much of a contract he's got left or anything else like that. Or, like, would he be interested in just parachuting in here and take – and I don't know that you can go mid-season, like – to bring in Noel Thorpe and all of a sudden you got different systems, you got different verbiage and all the rest of it. I don't think that logistically is really realistic. I don't know that you can do that. As wonderful and as interesting as it sounds, I don't think you can do that mid-season. But my goodness, when you've got a guy like Noel Thorpe out there, I don't know if you can almost kind of squat on him as an organization, like bring him in as a consultant early on so at least he's on your staff and then you can do what you need to do next year. I'm right there with you, Ron. I don't know how you go about securing him, but my goodness, when you got a situation with a guy like that, he'll be in line for a coaching job. Like if there's the next head coaching job that pops up in the CFL, I would think that Noel Thorpe would be on a short list of three or five names that would include Paul Appelese, Noel Thorpe, and whoever else you want to throw on there. But it's something when you've got a coach of that caliber sitting out there now.
I've never seen it in season, and I don't think the Bombers would do that. I think they're going to finish the season, evaluate everything the way it is. But we have seen the consultant thing done before. Isn't that how Belfay got hired? He was brought in as a consultant.
That's right. Yes.
And then he took over in the off season. Yeah. So it's interesting. Obviously, Noel Thorpe is a great coordinator. So I just don't see it happening mid-season with the Bombers or anybody else, unless somebody else makes a change.
But as a consultant, that there you could grab him mid-season, have him under contract, and then you can work things, right?
Yeah. Ron, thanks for the call. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza fan line. Shane, you're up next at 780-1290. Go ahead.
Hey, my question is, you got Cheveldayoff and Maurice that are always on the hot seat. How come goalie coaching is never on the hot seat?
Oh, we talked about this yesterday.
Sorry, I missed it.
No, that's fine. For those who didn't catch it, along with yourself, I don't know if they're not on the hot seat, and I sort of just briefly went over this yesterday. To me, any coaching comes under the head coach. Like, so if Wade Flaherty and what he does and what he doesn't do. There was some goaltending experts we had on throughout the year last year that said it's very difficult to make a change to any goaltender mid-season. That's why they sort of took a little break with Connor Hellebuck and called Pavlik up and worked with him on getting his glove hand higher. Obviously, you feel that they should make a change with Wade Flaherty?
What I'm thinking is that obviously goaltending is never improved whatsoever along all the seasons. So why isn't he under the hot seat? Why should we not have a different message in here? Should we not have something else, another direction?
And I'll disagree with that. The one year that Andre Pavlik, the playoff year, when his career save percentage for the year was .920, he looked different early on that season. And there was all kind of criticism. He was under fire. His job was on the line. And he looked way more quiet and calm in the net. His movement was way more controlled. I thought early on there, it looked to me like somebody got through to him and that he applied himself in a way that he was notorious for not doing so. Even his own countrymen talking about how he never really, one of those kind of athletes that relied on his natural ability instead of really working along the lines of a Mark Scheifele to improve himself as each year goes by. So, we're talking about one season of critical thought as to what Connor Hellebuck did, and then a handful of them to what Andre Pavlik did. And so Andre Pavlik was known well. It was well known he didn't work and apply himself very hard at his craft and trade. Connor Hellebuck has a sophomore year, which it wasn't disastrous. It was just a little bit under expectations in what he did. And so I think, like, I understand the thought here of people calling out Flaherty and the goaltending situation, but I think ultimately you've got to look more at the athletes for that one specific position, right? And more so than, let's say, defensive concerns, looking at Charlie Huddy, but knowing that it's under the direction of Paul Maurice, the goaltending coach, it's a fair question to ask, but I think you got to put most of what you've seen so far on on Andre Pavlik, and then even a guy like Connor Hellebuck, what we talked about early in this season, his hands, everybody knew his hands are too low and that sort of thing, and that was something he was working on. And sort of a, I don't know that you can comment on what Flaherty's done with Hellebuck at this point in time yet.
I think it is a fair question, though, and I think if there aren't improvements, maybe more so Hellebuck's game, because I don't know, I don't think Wade Flaherty's really even worked with Steve Mason yet. I mean, maybe seen him a couple times, but nothing super significant. But like, if there's not improvement, it might not solely be the goalie coach's fault, but at some point, you know, maybe a change would be the best direction for everyone there, because we see guys all the time. Francois Allaire is a goaltending legend, and he's pumping goalies left and right out of the New York Rangers. He's done a tremendous job there. There's been some work done in Toronto too as well. Anaheim, like, there's a lot of goalie factories where they've managed to churn out, and I forget the, I think it's Tim Korn in Washington, but I mean the Capitals have basically crapped out goaltending prospects every couple of years. Like, it's at some point, if there is an improvement, I think it is a, I think Shane makes a good point that you do have to look at it.
I think it's a real dangerous. You have two athletes cut from the same sort of cloth here in Andre Pavlik and Dustin Byfuglien, two guys with what appears to be remarkable natural skill, and neither guy that applies himself to being the very best that they can be and making the most of their potential. And the reflections on the coaches in those situations is remarkable, right? Like, that's something to, this isn't a Mark Scheifele type approach to, I'm going to be as good as I can be. Like, most, I think most athletes are of that mindset. I'm working as hard as I can to be as good as I'm going to be. Here you got two guys that stand out for not being the best that they can be, not applying themselves to the level necessary in reaching their potential, and how that reflects on coaches is real interesting to me.
And the one thing I'll add is, I know a lot of people are down on Wade Flaherty with the NHL goaltenders, but before Rick St. Croix came on board 2 years ago with the Moose, wasn't he also the guy in charge of the Moose? Like, yes. he was doing both. Yeah. So then when we saw the numbers Michael Hutchinson put up with the Manitoba Moose, when we saw the numbers, or the St. John's Ice Caps rather, when we saw the numbers that Connor Hellebuck put up with the St. John's Ice Caps and taking them to a Calder Cup final, that was under Wade Flaherty when he was doing both. It's only a matter of the last two seasons that Rick St. Croix, who I believe strongly in and used to be with the Toronto Maple Leafs, came on board, that he was solely with the National Hockey League. So, it, like, if you're asking why, I think the organization is looking at that and seeing what he actually did get out of them in the AHL and is trying to transfer that into the National Hockey League. And that's why I think they sort of, you know, haven't made a change, and why they haven't gone that direction. And I agree with Troy to a point, and Brandon as well, but especially at that position, a lot of the times you have to put that on the athlete. Like, there are things in season you can do and out season, and every goaltender in the off season goes home like Eric Comrie does and everybody else and works with their own guy and then comes back in. I'm not alleviating any of the pressure on the assistant coaches, but I think that it falls on the head coach if he wants to make a change or not. And Wade Flaherty has taken a lot of heat last year, but he's the guy that got the most at the AHL level out of Hellebuck, out of Michael Hutchinson, and we all know those numbers that those guys have put up, and really Eric Comrie to an extent as well, up until 2 years ago when Rick St. Croix came on board. We got to take a break. Great question, though, Shane, and great call. We'll take more of your calls. Neil, hang on, and we'll get to the rest of them on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when the Big Show returns to 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you in the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Neil, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys. Paul Maurice, I'm really glad that they extended Paul Maurice. But there's one thing he needs to change: the insanity of throwing the same power play unit over the boards that we've seen for the last 7 years, well, mostly the same for the last 7 years. I mean, it has to be an open audition. I mean, I don't care if Matt Hendricks is going to be the first line power play. If they score the goals, they get the time. You can't have this bias to veteran players.
Yeah, I didn't like the approach. You know, you see all the strong power plays in the NHL. you load up that number one team with your very best talent, and you go and kick butt as you can with getting them out there for something over a minute with the power play, right, with that first team. It doesn't matter which power play you're looking at, man. It's like that. And I didn't like it at all, the way it was spread out and between the two power play units. And I hope this year there's massive emphasis on the top power play and that sort of notion, like what you're talking about.
I hope he keeps throwing the same unit over as long as Liney's over there on his island.
As long as you're maxing, putting all the talent.
Throw whoever else you want out there, honestly. Yeah. Just have – I mean, right now – at 19, where does his shot rank in the NHL? Top three, top five? Like somewhere, like if you want to put Ovechkin and Stamkos ahead of him, that's fine. But after that, he's probably right there. And so to not have that weapon playing at least half the power play time you got would be just, it just can't happen again this year. There's no other way to put it.
Well, and Husser brings up this point all the time, too. Like, he understands that they were trying to get two power plays, but he would like to see just that. Like, just have one dominant power
emphasize
play and
one,
figure
yeah.
out the second one going forward. Is that what you'd like to see, too, Neil?
Neil's gone.
We got to go anyways, but good question. And that's, I'm sure, will be a hotly talked about topic as well during and throughout training camp and the start of the season. More of your calls next. If you want to weigh in, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. If you want to weigh in on the conversations, we're talking about the changes in the coaching staff in Montreal. Do you think the Calgary Flames would literally leave Calgary, given the fact that they're no longer pursuing a new arena with City Hall? Seattle gets a new arena. Mark Scheifele on his expectations, and Steve Simmons saying the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to win the Stanley Cup in the next 2 to 3 years. We posed the question of the Oilers, Flames, Leafs, and Jets. Who wins the Stanley Cup first? And who wins it in the next 2 to 3 years? And we're also talking about these comments from Mark Scheifele on expectations for this year. Well, he was on the NHL press tour junket throughout New York this past week. Here's Scheifele on expectations.
I think it's got to be, you know, first make the playoffs. Obviously we have a young team, but, you know, I think we made some good pickups in the summer. How much better did Patty get? How much better did Nikki get? You know, Troobs, Laos, me, every young guy on our team, you know, has to get better for us to improve, and that's it's going to be the defining test.
This has got to be the year. Like, we got to do it. Like, is there that feeling?
I think so. I think that's got to be your feeling every year. You know, you can't be like, oh, you know what? This is a rebuilding year. We're just going to take it easy. You know, every year you have to go for it. And I know, you know, with Blake running the ship, it's he's a pretty special guy. He's a competitive guy, and he's a guy that, you know, I definitely want to, you know, follow him to you know, bigger and better things.
When you have 82 points and I think seventh in the league,
yeah.
Like, and you, like, did at the end of the year, did you peek at the list and go, that's pretty good?
I looked at it and said it could have been better.
Really?
There's no doubt in my mind that in this sport you can't say, oh, you know, that was great, you know, I just hope to stay amongst them. You know, I'm pushing to be, you know, be better than Connor, be better than Sid. And, you know, obviously they're pretty lofty goals. You know, those guys are special players. They work unbelievably hard at their game. But, you know, at one time last year I was, you know, top in the league in scoring. So, you know, in my mind I see it as, you know, if I stay more consistent, you know, there's no reason why I can't stay there. So you know, I just got to continue to push. You know, I got some great line mates, which helps me. We got a great D core behind us, and you know, I'm going to continue to push to be the best, and not just be mentioned in that company, but be, you know, be at the very top.
Kid can't stand up. He needs to go back to the A. Go back to the A. Bambi can't stand up. Should have taken Couturier. Come on, what are they doing picking this Scheifele kid? Couturier way better. Seventh in the NHL. How awesome is that, huh? And he jumped on that right away, right? The interviewer, you finished as, yeah, seventh. Like, he knows exactly where he finished. And maybe it's going to be four or five, maybe three this year, right? It's just awesome. The ascension of Mark Scheifele is freaking awesome. What a story.
Who makes, as per Steve Simmons, who wins the Stanley Cup first? Oilers, Flames, Leafs, Jets?
Vancouver.
That bet I will take.
I have to go. I have to say Edmonton. They kind of got screwed out of that series against Anaheim last year, right? Like with some of the goaltender interference that was overlooked or let go, and like the gong show element of it, and you got the premier player on the planet. I think Cam Talbot is better. I know he's held in high regard, but I think he's even better than people think. I think their decor is just solid enough and strong enough to allow the top end flourish. Dreisaitl, what he's going to do? I'm going to say Edmonton. And it's boy, but is how exciting is it? Just in an overall general sense, what Edmonton, Toronto, Calgary, and the Jets, like the surging movement going on north of the 49th parallel is awesome stuff.
Are we in agreement that it's between Edmonton and Toronto?
Yes. Right now, both those teams are a step ahead.
I don't know.
You have to look at the playoff success last year and say
The Flames have deeper forwards. I think the Flames have the best defensive core. And it's just a question of goaltending. If they can get goaltending when you add Mr. Fu, and if Sam Bennett progresses, and
Dude can't
Tkachuk,
even do a pull-up.
You ever seen a chin-up bar score 20 there, Troy?
Good point. But the Oilers' depth at forward concerns me, and their defense concerns me. But I think they have better goaltending. This is why I think it's an interesting conversation. I think all four of these Canadian teams are very close to each other, and where one or two of the teams maybe tip the scales, whether it be in goaltending, I think another team tips the scales in forward depth or defensive core. So health plays into it for sure, but I think it's a very fascinating question and an intriguing one to put the Oilers, Flames, Leafs, Jets on a board and says who wins the Stanley Cup first.
The one thing that I think Edmonton and Toronto for sure have, I would say even over Calgary and definitely Winnipeg, and it can't be overlooked at all, it's coaching. And Toronto, not that Todd McClellan is not a good coach or anything, but Mike Babcock is the ultimate, is the ultimate kind of ace up the sleeve, where, look, the rosters are pretty close, the goalies are fairly close, all that. Best coach in the NHL.
Yeah, proven,
takes
no
every
question.
Team to the Cup final.
Yeah. And I don't. How do you question the depth of the Oilers when down the middle it could be McDavid, Dreisaitl, Nugent Hopkins?
Well, because Dreisaitl did nothing points-wise when he wasn't with McDavid.
Well, that's not true, though.
Are you sure about that?
Well, yeah. What did he put up compared to what he did
well,
with...
Well, it's not... He had pretty solid production away from McDavid. Not as elite with McDavid, but it was still pretty impressive.
Are we seriously talking about Nugent Hopkins?
As a third-line center.
Are you serious?
How many points did he have last year? And what did he do in the playoffs?
Well, I don't know that you can whittle it down to what did he do in the playoffs.
But. Well, I think you can. That's what we're talking about. If we're going to talk about how close the Oilers were to take him going to the next round, Nugent Hopkins was nowhere to be found.
Well, he gives you a half a point a game, and as a third line center, you're not going to take that? Or better, right? He's going to give you that or better.
What do you have in the playoffs?
In his first playoffs, he had 4 points in 13 games. Wasn't good.
It's not like but, even that, so knocking on the door a half a point a game. You can't talk to me, Ryan Nugent Hopkins. You can't argue the depth of the Oilers because of what he didn't do in 13 games in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can. We're talking about the playoffs.
Well, that's horse crap. You're gonna tell me that the Oilers having Nugent Hopkins as their third line center, if that's the way it's going to go, a guy that's averaged in his career 0.67 points per game, you're going to say that they're not deep because he only got 4 points in 13
playoff
games?
I'm not saying they're not deep. I'm saying that they were talking about trading him last year. Like, I just think depth-wise, this isn't so much knocking on individuals as it is looking at the overall teams. I mean, look at the Flames, Monahan, Backlund, Sam Bennett.
But then I could say, what did Sam Bennett do last year?
Well, yeah, fair enough. But I'm overall depth-wise, Frolik, Tkachuk, Furland, Goudreau.
Yeah, I'm just
specifically Troy Brouwer,
talking
Christopher
down the line.
Stieg. Christopher Stieg did more in the playoffs last year than Nugent Hopkins did. So when we're talking overall depth and we're going to compare the four teams, like I think that forward-wise, the Oilers of the four are the weakest. Doesn't mean they're weak. Of the four, they're the weakest.
Really?
From Calgary, Toronto, and Winnipeg? They have the best player.
Yeah, which really makes things difficult to judge, because that best player makes the two guys on either side of him way better. Even just going Monahan, Backlund, Bennett, that's going to be your three that's your three centers here for the Flames, and compare that to
this is what it was last year.
McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins.
I think the only thing that holds Calgary back is just that elite skill. Like, Monahan is a real, real good center, a number one center. But he's a bit ways down the line before you get to McDavid and Matthews, right? Like, that's the only concern I would have with obviously Mike Smith. But, like, Calgary's deep, but outside of Johnny Gaudreau, can Sam Bennett take that next step? And can Monahan maybe elevate himself to a 70-point guy instead of somebody with 60?
And then let's look at the six D-men for the Oilers and the six D-men of the Flames. And you're telling me that's comparable at all?
It's advantage Calgary, no question.
So I just think that when you just saying it's the Oilers or the Leafs, I disagree with that. I think that that's why I think it's such an interesting question. All these teams are in the conversation, the four Canadian ones, and where one team struggles, they might have an advantage at a different position, and it's just a matter of who puts it all together and plays better collectively.
Says the guy with the Ginla tattoo.
No, this has nothing to do with that. Every time you throw that out, it takes away from the argument. I mean, honestly, look at their decor.
Yeah, decor.
Look at their forward depth, and then if they get goaltending. Like, right now, before Smith has played a game for Calgary, I'll give the benefit to Talbot.
Absolutely.
But if you get in the playoffs, you're telling me the Flames' decor isn't going to be better than the Oilers, and won't that help your goaltending? And then you look at the Leafs, and you look at the Jets. The Jets, if they're healthy, they're six D-men. I put way over the Oilers. And then if Mason's even average and Talbot's better, but yet you have the Oilers' D in front of Talbot and you have the Jet. Like, that's why I think it's such an interesting conversation. They're so close to each other, and where one team takes an advantage over the other one, they have an advantage over that deficiency for that team.
Might come down to coaching.
And I tell you what, boys, another thing that plays a role there for all those three teams, for Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, is the division. Like, how much better or how much more confident would you feel about the Jets getting into the playoffs if they were in the Pacific take out either Calgary, Edmonton, and switch spots?
Or in the East.
Yeah.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in the conversation. Who's next?
Mike.
Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I'll tell you one thing the Jets have to do this year that they haven't done in the last 2 years is win three meaningful games in a row before March.
That's a fair point.
Well, and I'll even give them a little bit more leeway here with not even against the Central. They just have to start winning those games where they beat three Central teams and then go into Colorado or host Colorado. And, like, they have to start beating those kind of
the bottom,
teams.
Yeah.
If you added in those wins.
They're not going to have the same record against the Central this year as last, I don't think. 19-8-2? Mm-mm.
I just think that the Jets have to win. They're a great betting team against. Win two in a row, it's mark them an L all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing they have to do. And that doesn't come from the players. That comes from coaching. And I agree with you 100% where the Jets have the worst coach of the four Canadian teams.
I don't put not being able to win three in a row on coaching. If you are a player and you just went into Dallas and won a game, and then you go into Colorado, and that afternoon game in Colorado, come on, that's on coaching. There was something different coaching-wise than two nights before against the Dallas Stars. Come on.
Now, and I agree with what you guys are saying there, and that is a concern of the Jets. Like, whatever that is that exists here with the Jets and rears its ugly head far too often, it's still within the DNA of this team.
I do agree with you, though, about the winning three in a row. You have to get some win streaks put together.
I like the way
he
said that, before March. Yeah. Sometime before March.
Yeah. Preferably. Look, it can't just be three either. It's got to be five or six.
Yeah, you got to go on a run.
Playoff teams don't cap their – they don't win three in a row, lose one, win three in a row, lose one, and run that for 10 or 15 games. They'll put together a six or seven, and then follow that up after a loss with another three or something like that. Like the best teams always do that.
Although I like I think it was Dennis Back, and I was saying this too last year. Hey, man, win two, lose one, win two, lose one the whole season long. That's fine and dandy with me. Like, it's not so much what are the win streaks are. It's like, can you minimize the damage of losing streaks and skids and such?
And you bring up a good point, caller-wise. Coaching-wise, I always liked – I mean, Mike Babcock's Mike Babcock. I've always liked Todd McClellan. Glenn Gullickson in Calgary versus Paul Maurice.
How do you measure them?
That's what I don't
know. I don't think there's enough of a track record with Gullickson yet either. Kind of, yeah. And the, you know, the Flames special teams was pretty bad last year as well. So, I don't know. That one might be a wash as of right now. But Edmonton, Toronto have a big advantage, no doubt.
We'll continue the conversation. Sorry, who is that again?
Mike.
Mike, thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it as always, and we'll get to more of your calls and your thoughts on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we return to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The conversation should kickstart your heart. Days away from training camp starting for the Winnipeg Jets. Blue Bombers on their bye week, 8-3. They'll return home on Friday, September 22nd, to host the Red Blacks. Drew Tate will be a quarterback then. Changes in Montreal today. Jacques Champdelaine and Noel Thorpe out as head coach OC. And, of course, Thorpe defensive coordinator. Cavis Reed, the GM, takes over as head coach.
Hearing,
Anthony Calvillo, OC.
Hearing that... You know, North Thorpe is held in super high regard for his level of success and what he's done, but hearing that the players weren't very fond of him. Now, I don't know how much that means, right? Like, players couldn't stand Cal Murphy back in the day. They would respect him, but a good chunk of them, percentage of the guys playing for him, didn't like him. So I don't know what all that means, but what North Thorpe, like, North Thorpe swinging out there in the wind right now is something. To me, but boy, what a gong show! Just a few days out for the Owls, and I guess Cavis Reed coming in as your HC. There's not like a lack of familiarity there, but just the turmoil going on in that locker room when they're one game out of top spot in the East, right? Like that's the bottom line too.
Well, and I'm hearing the same sort of thing that a players only meeting took place recently. I don't know if that was discussed about coaching or what, but. This is interesting from Bill Beacon. Cavis Reed is late for his first press conference as coach. He didn't make it on time this morning. And no one has the key to the practice field right now because the guys who do are gone. So Cavis Reed, is from Bill Beacon. Cavis Reed, he's with the Canadian Press, is late for his first presser. And while he's there, nobody has a key to open the practice facility because the guys who did, he fired.
Huh. I'm also seeing some talk as to, you know, was Jacques Champdelaine, was that a Cavis Reed hire, or was that the Andrew Wettenhall? Like, was that the Wettenhalls have been maybe too involved, right, with some of the hires? It was went back to Pop, and when that Harkin fellow came in as well,
Hawken,
where Pop wasn't making decisions, like that whole thing's kind of messy as well, right, starting from the ownership. So this probably isn't the end of the madness in Montreal,
which is bizarre because ownership getting heavily involved with the day-to-day management of the team has worked out in basically every other sports league, if I can remember.
If you're a player, Troy, and you're on your way to practice today, and you hear your head coach and DC have been fired, and you get to practice and go on the field, and you can't get in because nobody has the key.
Yeah.
At what point as an athlete are you going, what is going on here? Like, you're not going to say anything publicly, likely.
Well, the guys are talking, though, right?
They're sitting there going, like, man, I miss college. But seriously, like, as an athlete, what do you think of this that's going on right now?
Well, I guess that would depend on how much Noel Thorpe was disliked. First of all, and even Jacques Champdelaine, right? Like I've heard for years that guys can't stand Jacques Chapdelain, that he's a real tough guy to play for. So if you get two, like if you got a Chapdelain and a Nolthorpe, and if neither one of them are liked, Kavis Reid was a coach for a long time, played in the CFL, was a coach, was liked so far as I know. So this could be something that reboots and invigorates everybody. Like maybe a guy like Darian Durant now just completely dealing with Anthony Cavillo under Kavis Reid. Maybe this is the perfect toxin here for medicine here for a team that was, because people were mystified, right? What's going on with Montreal here? Why aren't they taking, a month ago they looked like they were going to take control of this division and have just sort of stalled out. So it might be that the players are like, thank God we got rid of those guys. Let's go with Kavis Reid and go. I think Kavis Reid's got the opportunity here, from what I know of him, to grab a hold of this group and for them to now start to get some traction.
Do you go home if you're just standing outside this practice facility that nobody has a key to?
Yeah, I don't think you want to get in trouble right now, right? You don't want to, you don't want to be late. You show up 15 minutes early for everything that's going on. Just sit and wait till everything opens up.
I'm not laughing. It's interesting to me. It's a gong show in Montreal, for sure. Also interesting conversation with the Oilers, Flames, Leafs, Jets. Steve Simmons saying who would win the Stanley Cup first. He's saying that the Leafs are going to win it in 2 to 3 years. Interesting times there. And then, of course, the Calgary Flames no longer negotiating to get a new arena in Calgary. And Gary Bettman front and center. And a lot of people that I follow on Twitter and a lot of people I respect have the same sentiment you have. It's ridiculous for Gary Bettman to still be standing in front of cameras and making innuendo threats about pulling a team out of a Canadian market.
It's more so the way he does it, too. Like, the second he gets, he puts his nose up a little bit, shakes his head the way he does, the jowls get going and all the rest. Like, this the tone of it, so full of pompous and that sort of thing. But getting back to the teams here, these are fun times for fans of Canadian hockey. And I know that I'm weird because I like the Habs, I like the Leafs, I like the Oilers, I love the Jets, right? But just seeing all these Canadian teams really starting to catch and start to flex a little bit here, it's a shame with Carlson being out maybe till sometime in November and what that's going to do to the Senators. And then the Canucks are the Canucks. But it's just a neat time here where people are talking about, hey, the Canadian team hasn't won the cup in for however long here, and there's an opportunity upcoming here with the Leafs surging in the East and with the Oilers, Flames, Jets kind of coming along in the West. There could be a cup final. Boy, how much would Bettman love that, huh? An all-Canadian cup final? They might shut down the offices in New York.
We'll touch on this tomorrow, but ESPN hockey reporter Emily Kaplan put this article out. I haven't read it yet, but here's the headline. I asked 29 NHL players to play commissioner and suggest a rule change to make the league better. Huh. The only one who said they would take away three-point games was Taylor Hall. Of 29 NHL players asked to play commissioner and suggest one rule change, the only one to mention getting rid of the three-point games was Taylor Hall. And that's from our own Michael Remus.
So does getting rid of three-point games, I don't really understand that.
I think it's the whole hustler thing about...
Yeah, so that means making them three-point games.
No, getting rid of the extra...
So making every game worth two?
Every game's worth 2 points. And what it does is it alleviates that false, you're still in it when you're not in it. Mm.
I thought the hustler thing,
it was a little different. Every game was worth 3 points.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, right, yeah.
I haven't read it, so I don't know what Taylor Hall
means. No, I haven't read it either.
That'll be a neat thing, though, to dive into for sure.
We'll delve into it tomorrow because we are out of time today. The Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski is up next at 11 a.m. And then, of course, the Gondola Pizza warm-up with Hustler at 2, the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph at 3 o'clock today. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is at 12:15, and then, of course, at 5:15 on the afternoon ride as well. We have a pair of tickets to the Bisons versus UFC Dinos homecoming football game at IGF this Saturday at 1 o'clock at Investors Group Field, 780-1290. The 12th caller through gets those. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rowicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290. 1290.